President Trump.
This is the first time they've ever seen where everybody is unified, because as you know, we're going to Egypt after Israel. They're all into this deal. Everybody's into it.
Full coverage as events unfold. Meanwhile, back in the UK, for a man who famously apparently doesn't sweat, things might be getting a little sticky after this interview.
We decided that we would part company, and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him from that day forward.
And that is a blatant lie that will throw the royal family into a fresh crisis. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Hamas has handed over 7 Israeli hostages to the Red Cross, the first under the Gaza ceasefire deal. 20 living captives are set to be exchanged for hundreds of Palestinian detainees. Tens of thousands of Israelis are watching the transfers at public screenings across the country, with a major event being held in Tel Aviv. Adam Manit, whose cousin, Saki, was taken hostage by Hamas, has been speaking to LBC this morning.
Bittersweet for my family, obviously, because of what happened to my cousin, but who was murdered in captivity after his firstborn daughter was murdered on October 7th, and he watched her die in his arms. He was taken with our neighbor, Omri, who is the oldest hostage, and he is now being released as we speak. Joy and pain all in one.
President Trump is heading to the Middle East for the handover of the hostages. He is set to address the Israeli parliament before heading to Egypt for a peace summit with leaders including Keir Starmer.
They're all into this deal. Everybody's into it. It's never happened before. So I would say this is a lot tougher, but we'll see how it all works out.
Mr. President, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, has not gone so far as to say the war is over. In your view, is the war between Israel and Hamas over?
War is over. The war is over, okay? Do you understand that?
Stay with LBC for the latest and follow live developments on the LBC app. In other news, the Conservatives say Keir Starmer must address unanswered questions about the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Downing Street strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution of the two men. Donald Trump's threatened to provide Ukraine with long-range missiles if Vladimir Putin doesn't end his invasion. Moscow has expressed extreme concern about the possibility of Kiev having access to the Tomahawk system. And 5 leading car makers are due to face trial accused of cheating on emissions tests. The mass legal action, set to be heard at the High Court, is the largest of its kind in English history. Mercedes, Vauxhall, Renault, Nissan, Ford and Peugeot all deny wrongdoing. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 94.27 after closing down 82 on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny across Scotland, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? On Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 3 minutes after 7 on Monday, October the 13th, and a day that will go down in history. As it is reported, the first 7 hostages have been handed to the Red Cross. This is the IDF saying, from Hamas. I'll run you through all the numbers and through the timeline. And it really is a day you do not want to leave this radio station, because we will, I promise you, be chronicling historic events. Whatever happens in the future, it is a day of destiny, a day of history. More on that in a moment. Let's come back to matters in the UK. A day of destiny, possibly for the royal family, as Prince Andrew, famously, you remember the man who said that he has a condition he can't sweat? I bet he's sweating now, as in the email shows, he downright lied in that television interview. And of course, there are now calls that he should be stripped of any royal responsibility. Some commentators saying this is a bigger crisis as it was the abdication in the 1930s, almost 100 years ago. In other matters, planning to travel to Europe soon, possibly for a pre-Christmas shopping spree or whatever? Well, you need to be aware of this new scheme, this EES as it's called. Julia Lobu-Sides, Chief Executive of the Advantage Travel Partnership. She told LBC...
This is fingerprints and facial recognition, all about border control, but also to digitally track the amount of stay that we have in Europe.
In other news, how a mosque in an uber-liberal part of London has banned all females over 12 from a charity park run. Why did they even think about that? Why is it difficult to use the expression born and bred? Here's a Reform UK councillor, Claire Mackie-Brown, speaking in an interview with STV last week about asylum hotel protests.
You know, there is a true unrest, and it's scary. It's scary as a local resident, somebody who's born and bred here. I shouldn't have said that.
You're not allowed to now say born and bred? Goodness only knows what a woman like this would have made of that.
I have only one thing to say. You turn if you want to. The lady's not for turning.
But the lady was for arriving 100 years ago today, the centenary of the birth of Margaret Thatcher. We'll look back at what she achieved.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Numbers and a timeline. Let's start with this on this day of destiny. As I've said already, the expect with the handover has, as reported, began around 6 o'clock our time from what's called the Netzarim corridor and will continue, it is thought, for about another hour. So these are extraordinarily flexible times, by the way. The release is taking place in two stages, according to Reuters, or the Israeli media and Reuters, starting with the release of some hostages at around 8 a.m. Well, that's, that's a 6 hour time, so that's absolutely, should have changed that for you. So that is absolutely where we seem to be going. The remaining hostages who are still alive from Khan Yunis and urban refugee camps will be somewhere between 9 and 10. Then Donald Trump is due to address the Knesset. That's scheduled to be, again, our time, 9 o'clock scheduled. From there, the president heads to Egypt in the afternoon to be part of the peace ceremony at 12:30 our time in Sharm el-Sheikh, where other world leaders will gather. The numbers, well, as I say so far, I'm just checking, no, we're still at 7 hostages. Of course, there are believed to be 20 living and the remains of 28 others, so a total of 48, of whom 20 are believed to be still alive. And on the other side, there will be approximately 2,000 Palestinian hostages, prisoners, whichever you want to call them, around 2,000, of whom it is reported 250 have been convicted of various terror offences. So that's as much as we have, as I say, very fluid, but we bring you what we can. But this is a day many Israelis wondered would ever come. They were, of course, the hostages taken into Hamas captivity just over 2 years ago. In the last few moments, I've said we've seen the first 7. But let's go back to the weekend. Many Israelis have been gathering what's now known as Hostages Square in Tel Aviv to celebrate the upcoming release, and they were addressed by Trump's peace envoy, Steve Witkoff, and listen how the crowds cheer when Trump's name is mentioned, and interestingly boo at the mention of their own Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu.
We all owe a debt of deep gratitude to President Trump. To Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Maybe you could have said a little more. What's interesting when you look at video is, by, of course, the most flags you see, obviously, are the Israeli flags. But there are a heck of a lot of American stars and stripes there. And despite what Sir Keir Starmer, Bridget Phillips, or anybody else says, you cannot find one Union flag, one British flag. The idea, as Bridget Phillips put out yesterday, that we were involved in any way, shape, or form, utterly dismissed, by the way, by the Americans. But back to Netanyahu. Jeered there, he addressed the nation last night, urging Israelis to put their differences aside and celebrate this landmark moment.
People didn't believe that it was going to happen, but so many of our people did, and I believed. I know there are many controversies amongst us, but on this day, and hopefully in the near future, we've got every reason under the sun to put them to one side.
As I mentioned earlier, President Trump is due to land in Israel this morning before heading to the Knesset, the parliament, to give a historic address, then to Egypt, as I said, for a summit to discuss the future of the Middle East, which will be attended by world leaders, including Emmanuel Macron, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, and, of course, our Sir Keir Starmer. Speaking on board Air Force One, the president declared that war is over.
This is the first time they've ever seen where everybody is unified, because as you know, we're going to Egypt after Israel, and we're going to meet all of the leaders of the very powerful and big countries and very rich countries. They're all into this deal. Everybody's into it.
Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, has not gone so far as to say the war is over. In your view, is the war between Israel and Hamas over?
War is over. The war is over. Okay. Do you understand that?
Let's hope he's right, but... Now to Hostages Square, where celebrations have rung out in the last hour. As it has been confirmed, the first seven have been released. And of course, some people have spent the entire weekend there waiting for this moment. Let's go to Alexander Cornwell, who's senior correspondent for Reuters, joining us from inside the Parliament, or the Knesset, in Jerusalem. What do you expect you're going to hear inside the Knesset later today, Alexander? Good morning.
Good morning. That's right. President Trump will address the Knesset in a few hours, and we expect him to talk about peace, to talk about a new direction for the Middle East as he heads late this afternoon to Sharm el-Sheikh. However, speaking to some members of the Israeli government today, I've been speaking with members of the Knesset. They say that the war is not over yet, that there are still a number of objectives that need to be achieved, including Hamas laying down its weapons and confirming that Hamas has no further role in Gaza. So from the Israeli side, although the president has declared the war is over, some members here in the Knesset say not yet.
What do you understand to be the situation in Gaza at the moment regarding Hamas?
I mean, Hamas has been decimated over the past 2 years. It's without a doubt they have lost thousands of fighters who have been killed in fighting, who have been detained by Israelis. Now, they have recruited many thousands, but from what I understand, they're simply people off the street, people who are hungry, people who are in need of money to feed their families, and they are not trained fighters. They are not like Hamas is not the military fighting force that it was on October 6th or even October 7th 2 years ago.
Lastly, what do you pick up as the mood from ordinary Israelis towards Donald Trump as he flies in, Alexander?
I think there's definitely a deep amount of appreciation for President Trump that they've gotten to this moment, that he's gotten this moment. There's a sense of gratitude and also a sense of relief that this day has come. They are going to see the release of the hostages.
Alexander Cornwell, senior correspondent for Reuters, joining us from inside the Israeli Parliament, or Knesset in Jerusalem. Thank you for that. 11 after 7. Listening, Fleur Hassan Nahum, who's former deputy mayor of Jerusalem, is now Israel's special envoy for trade and innovation. Thank you very much for coming on. When the hostages are safely returned, when the remains are also with the families and proper burial can be afforded to those poor souls, what does the future look like to you? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nikki. Look, we always hold hope. Israel has always held hope. This is why we signed the Abraham Accords in 2020, which, by the way, was brought to us by Donald Trump. And I always said, when people ask me, what do you envision for the day after in Gaza? And I always used to say there has to be some type of regional arrangement that is led by the moderate Sunni Arab countries, the ones that have rejected Islamic radicalization for their societies. So the Emirates kicked out the Muslim Brotherhood from their midst over 10 years ago. The Saudis have spent 20 years since 9/11 trying to clean out the Wahhabis, who are essentially their radicals, from their society. Both these countries have de-radicalized their educational system. And I always said, if I had a vision for Gaza after the war, it would be for that type of force to take hold, to de-radicalize society, give these people a better future, better life. This is a beautiful strip of land that Israel retreated from in 2005 to give the Palestinians the autonomy they claimed they wanted, and instead they created a terrorist state. And so I pray for the Palestinian people. I pray for us. We just want to live in peace. I think people get us all wrong. We want to live in peace, in our secure borders, and that's it.
On that point, when President Trump says war is over, is he right in your view?
Well, we'll have to see. We have this 20-point plan, which has a number of stages. The first stage, and this is where President Trump really made the difference in other plan. And people keep saying, oh, well, they could have signed the same deal with Biden a year and a half ago. That's not true. Because what Biden was saying to Israel is retreat, and then maybe we'll try and get some hostages back. And Trump put a gun on the table, took a tar, and said, listen, they're all coming back, and then we're doing A, B, and C. And that's the difference. And even when Hamas accepted the deal, they said, yes, but Trump took that and said, yes, we have a deal. And now he's saying war is over. He's willing these things by his strong rhetoric and commitment. He's willing the war to be over. And I pray that that means it's over.
What kind of welcome awaits the president when he gets to Hostages Square, do you imagine, Fleur?
Of a king. The welcome of a king, because there's an overwhelming feeling here that if he hadn't pressured Qatar and Turkey, who are essentially the sponsors, enablers, funders of Hamas, and said to them, the gig is up. If he wouldn't have done that, that wouldn't have happened. But also, again, he did it in such a unique style. He showed them a plate of goodies and said, look, this is what it means for you to be a real ally of America. Or, you know, trade deals and defense assurances. And this is the liability of you not, of you going with Hamas, of you keeping enabling Hamas. And let me tell you, Nikki, when I feel we will know there was a real change, when Al Jazeera stops spouting out poison, anti-Semitic poison against Israel, they are the poison machine of Hamas, that day I will know that Trump really succeeded with Qatar.
Grateful for your time this morning. Thank you, Fleur Hassan Nahum, your former deputy mayor of Jerusalem. You're now Israel's special envoy for trade and innovation. So when President Trump said this last night.
In your view, is the war between Israel and Hamas over?
War is over. The war is over. Okay. You understand that?
Do you agree? Plus, crisis in the monarchy or crisis at the palace, as Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, is shown to be a proven liar over his contacts with the disgraced dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Just turned 7:16, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The release of the remaining living Israeli hostages from Gaza is now underway. The first captives have been handed over to the Red Cross as part of the US-led ceasefire deal for Gaza. Donald Trump is due to arrive in the Middle East for the handover, followed by a peace summit in Egypt. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, sunnier in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic was being held on the M25 clockwise at Junction 2 at the A2 after a car broke down. But all the lanes are back open now. But there are still delays back over the QE2 bridge from Junction 30 at the A13. In Carshorton, the high street is closed both ways, and that's following an accident. And that's now starting to cause lengthy delays in the area. Very busy on the A1M southbound to Junction 7 at Stevenage, and also the A1 heading southbound to Stirling Court is looking very busy on the approach. On the trains, well, these problems do continue for Southeastern. They can't run between Faversham and Gillingham, and Thameslink are suspended between Rainham and Gillingham.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, we value the variety of life. It's why we're introducing 4 for £2 on 8 Lidl bakery favourites with Lidl Plex. You can mix your twists with your turnovers, create a croissant supergroup, or just nab a whole bag of pecan plats. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, GB only, 18 plus, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Train to Peckham, kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
It's 19 minutes after seven. Quickly, the headlines were they're obviously looking forward to, both chronologically and emotionally, the release of the hostages, and that's what they focus on. Of course, they'll be in the past tense, hopefully, tomorrow. Historic summit to agree Gaza peace deal is the front page of The Eye. Hopes and prayers as hostages set for release is the front page of The Times. Hostages and world await day of destiny is the Daily Mail. And lastly, the Daily Mirror, hope amid the chaos is what it says to the websites, to the LBC app. Well, of course, they're up to date straight away. They're free at last. Hamas releases the first seven Israeli hostages. And let's take one other story at random. I'll pick this one here. Here we go, unsurprisingly. It's The Sun talking about the crisis that's beset the royal family. Royal email crisis. Duke found to have deceived in that TV interview. And we're going to have more on that in later in the show. But war is over, so says President Trump, in midair and in no doubt that it's over. But is he a little bit deluded? Peter's in Stirling. What would you say to him, Peter? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Firstly, I'd say, I'll start by saying I condemn Hamas and Netanyahu, of course, but I think that they're the two big winners out of all of this, weirdly.
Who are the big winners?
Netanyahu and Hamas.
Are the winners?
Okay. Yeah, they're the winners.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
So Netanyahu was already deeply unpopular when the October attacks happened, and he's used his conflict to hold on to power. So that's how he's won. And you heard the boos. He is deeply unpopular in Israel, and now he'll go.
Yes.
Hamas, now, there's point one of the peace plan was Gaza will be a de-radicalized terror-free zone. We've seen from every conflict between Israel and Gaza that every flare-up in tensions has radicalized the next generation of young Gazans.
Yep.
Looking at the pictures from Gaza, they've radicalized the next 20 or 30 years of young Palestinians. And also, Israel now sits more diplomatically isolated than it has been in generations.
What if prosperity is brought to the region? So instead of these bombed-out ruins and remains of buildings that I'm looking at now, there are hotels, there are restaurants, there are coffee shops, there are things like that that will provide both economy and stability. What then?
It's a big what if, and it all depends on if you've actually got a peaceful basis to build that on. And at the moment, it's going to have to be taken day by day, and I really can't see this making a long-term measurable impact. I think this will continue for another 30 to 40 years. We've not achieved peace between Palestine and Israel. This will just continue to roll on, and there'll be another conflict in another, say, 10, 15 years. There'll be another big scale-up in hostilities again.
Well, when I say this, Peter, I don't think I'm being personally nasty to you, but I hope you're wrong. I don't mean that nasty, but I'm sure you hope you're wrong as well. Peter, thank you for getting us started. Abdul, you'll be the next caller on that. Let's come closer to home, although it is about going overseas, and many travellers to Europe will see changes in border security. We actually started from yesterday and certainly through today with the launch of what's called EES, or EES, EU's new Digital Entry and Exit System. This comes after many delays. Well, let's go to Greg Dickinson. Greg is senior travel writer at The Telegraph. And you went to the port of Dover, I understand, last week. What took A, why, and B, what did you discover? Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I went down to the port of Dover last week to see how prepared they are for these EES checks. They seem fairly confident there's not going to be much chaos down there. Not much chaos. So what I saw was basically the coach processing area, because they're starting just with coaches and with freight traffic. So if you're just driving down to Dover, hopping on the ferry, you won't be checked until November the 1st.
Right.
And in terms of the coach areas, 12 kiosks, they're fairly self-explanatory. You know, it's not peak travel season. So they were saying they're not advising anyone that it's going to be taking hours and hours to go through it all. They think it should be.
And talk us through the process. What is it you have to do and why?
So you need to give a fingerprint scan. You need to give a facial biometric scan. These are all on little kiosks. You know, they look like the machines you buy your train tickets from. And then to get into France, you need to answer a short questionnaire where they're basically asking,
what's the capital of France and who's the president? Because that could change daily at the moment.
Well, yeah. So these questions are pre-existing Schengen border zone immigration questions, which actually you could have been asked all of this time for many years, right, but border officials just haven't. So it's things like, do you have sufficient funds for your entire trip? Do you have proof of accommodation? Do you have medical insurance? And do you have a return ticket to come home?
Right.
So people have been slightly thrown by this because you may not have a return ticket home. You know, you might be flying off to New York from Paris.
Yeah.
So And at the, when I was down at the port of Dover, I said, well, what happens if you say no to one of these questions? You know, what if you're staying with a friend so you don't have proof of accommodation? And they said, you may receive some further questioning from the border officials, the French police, basically. But there's still quite a few ambiguities in that regard as to why the questions are there and what exactly happens if you fail this crucial test.
Right. Come on, you're an expert here. What do you imagine? I note that they're sort of trying to, if I can use this expression, drip it in bit by bit. When is the pressure point going to be? Skiing holidays? Christmas holidays? What's going to happen, Greg?
Yeah, I think the first real test will be over Christmas, and then it will be Easter will be the really big one. To be honest, we'll have a much better idea in the coming days, because in the UK, you're getting tested at St Pancras. You're having to give your data at St Pancras International, down at Port of Dover, and at Eurotunnel in Folkestone. They've all got what's called this kind of stop valve mechanism, where if it gets too much, then they can say, right, it's too much, the queues are getting too long, so we're not going to be doing EES today. You're going to go through passport control as normal.
Right.
So there's only so long these queues can get until they're going to say, that's enough for today, we'll carry on tomorrow.
Right.
Where it could get a bit congested is in the arrivals hall at European airports. So yesterday there were reports of hour-long queues at Prague, for example, because, you know, if a few flights land at the same time, for example, we all know that it can take quite a long time to get through passport control anyway, let alone having to give your fingerprint and a biometric scan as well.
And this is for life, or do you have to renew your fingerprints every 5 years? Lastly, what happens?
Yes, it's every 3 years. You have to top it up just in case it's changed.
Oh, Greg. Thanks very much. Greg Dickinson, senior travel writer at The Telegraph. He went down to Dover in Kent to see the 12 kiosks in operation. But imagine a school trip. How are you going to process all those kids? But where are you saying, we're staying at the hotel? I don't know. The teacher just tells us to go there. And they won't have very good French. This is going to be absolute shambles, isn't it? Oh, my goodness me. And a coachload of old people trying to go through Dover. And I don't want to be rude, but they're not necessarily that computer savvy. Where are we staying again, George? What? What's the name of that hotel? What hotel? Oh, God. Well, we'll keep a wary eye and see how it all goes. Back to events far more gravity than that, which is the release of the hostages. I'm just quickly checking. We still are currently at 7. Hopefully, the other 13 remaining ones will be released. And it is thought then, of course, sadly, there are 28 bodies or whatever they can find so that the families can have proper burials. But for the president, war is over. Abdul in Tottenham. Yes or no? Good morning.
Morning.
What do you think?
Unfortunately, the war is not over.
It is not. Why do you say that, sir?
Because people are not talking about the symptoms of this war, and they are concentrating only Hamas, which is the creation of Netanyahu, forgetting what is happening in West Bank. The settlers taking over the land every single minute of the day, and as long as there's no peace, or let's say a settlement for the Palestinians, the war will continue, either after the Netanyahu gets his hostages to stay away from prison, or maybe a couple of months down the road, another war will break out.
But isn't that what this governing council is going to try, the governing council for Gaza is going to try and prevent, Abdul? Isn't that the idea?
Governing body of Mr. Blair, war criminal? What kind of governing body that will be?
Well, there will be many Palestine, of course, I need to say Sir Tony Blair has not been convicted of any war crimes, so we're just clarifying that one. There will be many Palestinians serving on this council.
Those Palestinians means nothing for the people in Gaza or West Bank. They are in the pockets of who pay them the highest
price. You don't even know who they are. How do you know they're in the pockets of someone?
Whoever comes.
Well, why would you be so negative? Do you want this to be just continue forever?
Listen, my friend,
I'm your friend because you seem so negative. Instead of celebrating the fact that people on both sides now, that the killing is going to stop, that maybe, well, no, aid has gone in and hospitals in Gaza are starting to function again, you seem so negative, Abdul.
I'm very disappointed with you. Unless you are naive and you're born yesterday or day before, this war will never end until the Palestinians get their rights and their land back.
Well, that's obviously not going to, not all of the land, that's obviously not going to happen, is it? Because Israel's not just going to move on.
No one says Israel have to move on.
Well, what
Israel have to accept the 67 borders.
Well, that is those, now these are the key issues that have to be debated now, and that is where the real hard work starts. But Abdul, I'm disappointed that you don't celebrate a day like today when children are getting food in Gaza, hospitals are getting aid there, and hostages are being released. I call that a good day, but clearly not for you. We'll continue this conversation. Also coming up after the news, the story of the run at a rather fashionable part of London, organised by a mosque, which unfortunately women of a certain age could not take part. Khadija Khan is a journalist who broke the news.
This was not happening in Pakistan. It is happening in Britain, where we have equal rights for men and women, where we treat women respectfully.
And we'll have more on that after this. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Hamas has begun the release of the last living hostages it's holding in Gaza as part of the ceasefire deal with Israel. Seven men who've spent the last 2 years in captivity have been handed over to the Red Cross and then to the IDF. A further 13 are due to follow by the 10 o'clock UK time deadline. President Trump is heading to Israel for the handover and a peace summit in Egypt later today. And the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, called for answers and transparency over the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Prosecutors say the case fell through because ministers failed to provide evidence labelling Beijing a national security threat. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, but turning increasingly sunny in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
I have found completely shocking the extent of the anti-Semitism that people have felt because of what's been going on in the Middle East, emboldened not just to criticise the Israeli government, but to use what is happening in the Middle East as a way of allowing you to expose what you really believe. And I think a lot of people have shown themselves for what they really are.
Tom Swarbrick, with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses. LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks, and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family-owned since 1931.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Aldous Plays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
Just like when you amplify your advertising with radio. 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7.32, just spare a thought if you were one of the families of one of these hostages. The number is still at 7. Red Cross handing the first 7 hostages to the Israeli military. I'm seeing some video footage now of vehicles, like those, I think they're Toyota Land Cruisers. It doesn't really matter what vehicles they are, but they're big and they've got the Red Cross flags flying and they're in convoy. And you're just waiting and waiting and waiting. We do have the identities of the 7 who've been released, but there are 13 others and I imagine you're in Hostages Square in Tel Aviv with other family members and you wait and you wait and you wait. It must be beyond exhausting. And just to tell you, the parts of Gaza that they're driving through, I'm seeing the video footage now, it is absolutely laid waste. It is just piles of rubble. There's whatever buildings are standing, have absolutely no windows, no roofs. The walls are blown out, the windows are blown out, people just milling around. Donkeys and carts. It is almost prehistoric when you see how it is. That's the picture of Gaza. All right, we'll return to that in a moment. War is over, says Donald Trump in midair on his way to speak at the Israeli parliament. I'm asking whether you agree. Into the world of business. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. And we come back to earth with a bang concerning stamps, the Royal Mail. What's happening there? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes, well, we know that there are quite a few changes underway in the processes around delivering letters. We know, because we've talked about it before on this show, that the universal service obligation has been reformed. The Royal Mail now doesn't have to deliver second-class stamps every day, 6 days a week, rather. It can do it every other day. That's a big cost saving to the parent company. Of course, the company's been recently taken over. We now learn that moves are underway to... Well, I suppose if you were to be dramatic about it, and I'm a journalist, so I'll be dramatic, phasing out stamps. We know that bosses now at the company are looking at ways in which people can simply print out their own numbered barcode at home in place of stamps. Comments that the chief executive of Royal Mail has made. He said you don't need a stamp. You can buy a combination of numbers. You can print it out at home and post it. Well, I don't know about you, but any time I have to deal with a little piece of officialdom that involves me printing something out at home, my heart sinks. So the idea that I'm going to sort of set up a funky old printer here to start printing out my letters is probably for the birds. But, I mean, it's not a million miles away from the way things are obviously stamped and franked and labelled in large parts of the postal system. But I dare say it's going to be a possible evolution that will be unwelcome to some.
Shall we move on and talk about... This is a second lead, and it's made a lot of traction over the weekend. Second lead in today's Daily Telegraph. The idea of a one-off raid on wealth in the upcoming budget. Who's putting that idea forward? How would it work? And what is wealth? How is it defined?
Well, you put your finger on the very difficult element of implementing or designing a wealth tax. There's been a lot of talk about the idea of additional taxes on wealth or even some sort of one-off wealth tax on assets or high income or high value property or a combination of all of the above. The Chancellor has said that she's not going to do one. She's not going to cook up some specific new wealth tax. And she can say to the likes of me, there you go, you see, I'm not going to do your worst fears. And she can say to her own MPs, we don't need to because we're already taxing wealth in a number of ways, whether that's through private school fees or changes to other parts of the tax system. We are coming after the wealthy or those with the broadest shoulders, as the Chancellor put it again over the weekend. They do expect those with the broadest shoulders to pay more. The Institute of Fiscal Studies, the big main taxation public spending watchdog, has cautioned her, has joined calls of many others, has cautioned the Chancellor not to just tinker with a dozen minor taxes, because doing so will almost inevitably have a negative impact on the economy and growth, and that if you've got to raise some money, then you should just grab the nettle and raise things like income tax and VAT. A penny on the basic rate of income tax would raise about 9 billion quid. There are some things you could do on national insurance that will raise more billions if you want to do that. You could put a penny on the 20% rate of VAT, and that will raise nearly 10 billion. The problem is those are things the Chancellor says she's not going to do. And unless you find some very sneaky and cheeky ways of doing it, it's going to constitute a manifesto break. But the pressure is on now to try and make the best of a bad situation when the budget comes, I suppose. Any tax rises are going to have broadly negative consequences for growth. Some tax rises are worse than others. I suppose that's the main message.
Let's talk a little bit about this city and what does it say for safety when we know it's inadvisable to walk around with an expensive wristwatch, just showing your mobile phone when you come out of a London Underground station. And now if you go shopping in a certain store, you can request a bag that does not bear its logo. That store being...
Well, that would be Harrods, and in particular some of the, well, I suppose they're all rather pricey. I wouldn't know. It's not where I tend to hang out for my Christmas shopping. But some of the jewellers in particular that sell in Harrods are certainly making anonymised bags available to customers. You don't then have to leave the store showing off what it is they've bought. It seems perfectly sensible to me, but I suppose some people do see it as another example of the way in which you have to change your behaviour in order to mitigate the risks of certain kinds of crime, particularly in central London. And I suppose, you know, for the likes of you and me, Nick, just walking up and down Oxford Street, we now have to stand on the right side of the line that says don't get your phone nicked. But for a certain kind of customer who shops at certain kind of shops, they prefer now to have anonymised bags. Although I dare say some people would rather still have the main logo on the bags. That's probably part of the reason of why they're shopping there in the first place.
Quick word on the story that's on City AM Online about UK and falling behind in a certain area.
Yeah, Deloitte, the big consultancy group, have their quarterly surveys of chief financial officers, and they're very closely watched because they do speak to an awful lot of heavyweight figures to put these surveys together, and it shows quite a deterioration in business sentiment, largely unwinding whatever tick-up we saw in the first half of this year. Chief financial officers saying that cost pressures have now moved to the top of their list of things that are causing them sleepless nights. Costs in businesses rising to the highest level in more than 4 years, and concerns among top bosses about the UK's competitiveness and productivity and therefore future growth prospects is now at its highest level since this survey began in 2014. So plenty of data there for the Treasury and others to chew over. And as you say, it's leading our story on cityam.com. We'll be looking into the figures a bit more later as well.
Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Talk around the same time tomorrow, 7:39. Mark's in Camden, being hanging on the line for some time. Your view, President Trump says tells us war is over now as he arrives in Israel. Would you agree with him? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I think the thing is that this is a positive thing.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I think, you know, in spite of all the tragedy that's happened from the beginning of this war started by Hamas, I think that anyone who's still out there on the street saying from the river to the sea, I think they're people who are just high on hate. And, you know, if they continue that line, they'd rather perpetuate the war. And, you know...
Why? What's in it for them? Why would they choose to do that, do you imagine, Mark?
I think some people become obsessed and addicted to their own prejudice. And I think this is one of the things. People spiral and spiral down. But I think it could be a fantastic thing. Hopefully, the Palestinians get maybe a new leadership. And also, it may be the downfall of the Netanyahu government and a less messianic government there. But I think we've got to draw from the positives of this. And if the war has even stopped, even right now, I think the world should be focusing on getting a better future for everybody out there, regardless of creed, because, you know, this has gone on too long, and there's too much suffering. But getting some hostages back...
I agree. And the exchange, and then there are prisoners going back, believed to be about 2,250 of whom have been in jail for considerable time, convicted of very serious offences, so you have to see that. And I think you're right, there is no chance of a lasting peace all the time Netanyahu's in power. There is no chance of a lasting peace all the time Hamas is in power. And I think the events today speak to both of those. Certainly the latter will have to go, and I think the former democratically will be to be booted out, I imagine. Mark, thank you for that. William, you'll be the next caller, 7:41. But let's come back to stories at home. This was a big story in your newspapers yesterday. I'm sure many of you saw it. How women and girls over the age of 12 were banned by a mosque from taking part in a charity fun run. It was a 5-kilometre event being held in an East London park yesterday. It had been billed as inclusive and family-friendly, open to men and boys of all ages, but organised insisting that female teenagers and women are forbidden from running. The Muslim charity run, organised by the East London Mosque, took part in Victoria Park in Tower Hamlets. The story was broken by the Mail on Sunday. Let's bring into the conversation Shaista now, Baroness Cochia, who's CEO of the Muslim Women's Network, and a crossbench peer joining me now. Well, you'll have had at least 24 hours to digest all the details of this, Baroness. Your take on this and what needs to be done. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First of all, I want to make a quick correction. So when I made the comment in the Mail, I said that this charity run that was single-sexed could be or likely to be a breach of the Equality Act. I've since had a chance to have a look at the law. Apparently, it's not a breach. You can have a single-sexed charity fundraisers, but that said...
Under Section 195 and Schedule 23 of the Act, you're absolutely right, Baroness, but can we speak more to the morality, if you will, of this?
Of course, yes. But that said, putting the law to one side, I do believe that the mosque could have been inclusive if it wanted to. So, for example, and still complied with their religious values. So, for example, on the day, they could have had men and women running at the same time, but, say, starting half an hour apart, for example, because some women may feel more comfortable running with women, for example, or men and women could have run at the same time in their own groups. And the reason why I say that is when Muslims go for pilgrimage to Saudi Arabia, Men and women are together. They're not segregated, and you are much closer together than you would be on a charity run. So I don't know what the motive behind it was. Is it they may have a view about, you know, women doing outdoor sport? I don't know. You'd have to ask them that. But another really important point I really want to make is, why are we having this conversation right now? Is this really about concern about Muslim women's human rights and equality and well-being? Or is it something else? Because I run a national Muslim women's charity. I'm worried about women's equality. But I do think this article might be more about the rhetoric in the wider public, looking for stories about having a go at Muslims, looking for stories, negative stories about Muslims.
But Marinus, is this not negative?
Yeah, of course. So therefore, I'm challenging that. Mm. But we are right now in Hate Crime Awareness Week. If we're really concerned about the safety and well-being inequality for Muslim women, we would also be talking about the regular hostility and hate crime and abuse that Muslim women are facing right now. But we're not talking about those issues. And for that reason, my charity launched a project called MuslimSafetyNet.org.uk to encourage more Muslims, especially Muslim women, to report incidents online. And these are the conversations we should be having as well.
Can you, you said it rather quickly, can you just give me the name of that website again? Because I don't think anybody had time to take it down. Just go a little slower, if you would. Yeah.
Muslim Safety Net. So MuslimSafetyNet.org.uk, which is accompanied by a national billboard campaign as well.
Okay, good luck with that. Hopefully my listeners have taken it down. Grateful for your time. Thank you. Shaista now, Baroness Gokhia, your CEO of the Muslim Women's Network UK, and a crossbench peer. Calls already coming in on this. So we'll be a minute late to the news, 7:45 now. Brian's in Rayleigh. Brian, your view on this, the activities of this mosque. Good morning.
Well, I worked in Pakistan for a while. I'd say these were extremists, actually, to the extreme, you know. There are women athletes in Pakistan, believe it or not.
Of course, I'm sure there are, yes.
I don't know if you know this, they've got 19 pilots in the Pakistan Air Force.
Right, okay.
So there are...
This is unnecessarily discriminatory, is what we're saying, Brian, isn't it?
This is a really old... From what I know, I'm not an expert. No. I think it's a very extreme bunch...
Well, I don't know if it's an extreme bunch. Let's tread carefully because I'm not familiar with that mosque. But certainly it's an extreme view that teenage girls can't take part in a run. Brian, thank you for that. Many of you holding on to comment. Thanks, Brian. Whether this is the war is over, as President Trump is asserting, we'll have more on that. But the conflict just beginning again in Buckingham Palace and for the royal family after this interview.
We decided that we would part company and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him from that day forward.
And that's a flat lie, Prince Andrew, from that interview in 2019 about the last time you had spoken or contact with Jeffrey Epstein, proven to be untrue. So someone who famously doesn't sweat, things getting a bit sticky. 7:46 now, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Hamas has begun the release of the last living hostages it's holding in Gaza as part of the ceasefire deal with Israel. 7 men have been handed over to the Red Cross and then to the Israeli military. President Trump is heading to Israel for the handover and a peace summit in Egypt later today. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning sunnier in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise at Junction 2 at the A2 after that car broke down earlier. There are still delays back over the QE2 bridge. Also delays on the M25 clockwise at Junction 24 at Potter's Bar. Just after the junction, a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Very busy on the A2 westbound up to the Kidbrook interchange, and that's following an accident. The delays go all the way back to the Danson interchange. In West Kilburn Lane is closed both ways after an accident, and in Welling, Brampton Road's just been closed both ways also after an accident, and that's causing long delays. And South Eastern are still suspended between Faversham and Rochester.
LBC.
With the long hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW Seasonal Inspection. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year, every year for career development. Like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty, it's actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
10 minutes before 8, let's update you with what we understand. These are fairly fast-moving developments in the Middle East. It is reported now that President Trump has touched down in Israel. We're still at the number of 7, the hostages to be released. If you're just joining the programme, it is believed that hopefully 20 living hostages will be returned by Hamas. Sadly, there are an additional 28, the remains of whom, again, for their families, one says, hopes will be returned. The President is due to address, I'm just getting the timeline, I know I'm off, the President is due to address the Israeli Parliament, let's get this absolutely right, 9 o'clock our time, so that would be consistent with him having arrived there. And on the other side, it is relieved somewhere in the order of around 2,000 Palestinian prisoners, hostages, whichever language you choose, will be returned. And then, of course, we move to this committee. So that's what we understand to be the developments there. And actually, we can probably get an update from our next guest or contributor, Labour MP and Middle East and North African Minister Hamish Falconer, who joins me now. I know the Prime Minister, our Prime Minister, is on his way to this the peace conference, or the conference that's taking place later in Sharm el-Sheikh. What do you imagine will come from that? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. These are incredibly emotional scenes unfolding as we speak. I think I just heard you saying we hope to see 20 hostages released today. That, of course, includes 2 hostages with strong UK links. I've met these families many times. I know you've been very engaged in this question. Mm-hmm. These are great scenes. This is a huge breakthrough. The ceasefire is so welcome after months upon months of hardship, both for the hostage families and Palestinians. The Prime Minister in Egypt will be rightly focused not just on welcoming this absolutely exceptional news, but on working on the really important questions in relation to what we're calling phase 2 of the 20-point plan. That includes some really difficult questions about the disarmament of Hamas, the reconstruction of Gaza, ensuring aid gets in, and that's what I'm sure the Prime Minister will be heavily engaged in over the course of the day.
Any student of recent history, Minister, will notice that you have to be aware of the vacuum that can be created whether you're talking about Beirut or you're talking about Iraq. What needs to be done in Gaza, do you imagine?
So it is absolutely vital, Nick, and I just want to reiterate the UK government's position on this. Hamas can have no role in the future governance of Gaza. They must be disarmed. When I was last on your programme, we were talking about some of the important commitments that all 22 nations of the Arab League have made to exactly those principles. Now, that isn't going to be easy. It is very, very hard indeed to remove an armed group from positions of power. And I know that there will be many people concerned by these reports that Hamas have re-emerged in Gaza, that they are settling scores, etc. It is all the more important that the UK, the US, all of the mediators remain focused on the really important questions in phase 2. And that is what the Prime Minister will be doing in Egypt and what I will be doing this afternoon at a conference we are co-chairing on the reconstruction of Gaza alongside Palestinian, Egyptian, Italian and various other international counterparts.
What is the dynamic that President Trump has brought to this process, in your view, Minister?
His role has been absolutely critical, Nick. He has clearly played a very important role in bringing both Hamas and the Israeli government to a point that we have long hoped for but has evaded us for months and months, which is a ceasefire, the release of hostages, the resumption of aid under the auspices of the United Nations, and all of the other elements that we're seeing on our TV screens today. President Trump has been absolutely vital. There have, of course, been other mediators too, Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey in particular, but the role of President Trump and his whole team has been vital.
He missed out on it this year, but should he be put up for a Nobel Peace Prize next year, Minister?
Honestly, Nick, I've been working on the Middle East a long time. It has been a conflict which has raged on and off the entirety of my adult life and the life of many of your listeners. If we are able to see this ceasefire through and to the lasting peace in the Middle East that we all want to see, I mean, one Nobel Prize will not be enough, I think.
On a related story, the US ambassador to Israel has accused the government of being delusional for claiming the UK played a key role in securing the ceasefire in Gaza. Mike Huckabee has criticised your senior colleague Bridget Phillipson after she claimed Britain had been a leading player behind the scenes in negotiating peace deals. How do you respond to Mike Huckabee's view, Minister?
Well, I think, to be fair to the Education Secretary, she was clear the critical role that the President played. I think she described our role as a key role behind the scenes. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff described it as a vital role this morning. I don't think on a day like today there's much mileage in getting into a he said, she said about this. Clearly, we've worked closely with our American counterparts, as Steve Witkoff was clear this morning. We'll continue to play an important role. That is why the Prime Minister is in Egypt. That is why I'll be co-chairing this conference this afternoon.
Finally, something else involving your colleague Bridget Phillipson. She said that the collapse of the so-called China spy case trial was a matter for the Crown Prosecution Service, although it's also said the Crown Prosecution Service was left in an impossible position when ministers refused to sign off the evidence needed for the trial to take place. Who's right and who's wrong here, Minister?
So I just want to be clear, it was not for ministers to sign off the evidence in this trial. And Nick, if you'll forgive me, I just want to take a step back. This
Please.
This relates to alleged offences in 2023. That is before the law was changed from what was the Official Secrets Act of 1911 to the National Security Act. It was always known that the Official Secrets Act was archaic and difficult legislation to secure prosecutions under. The CPS have set out in a letter to Parliament why case law in the High Court changed their view on what evidence was required. But the evidence that they have been seeking all the way through has been evidence about what the UK government's position in relation to China was at the period when the offences allegedly were committed. So that is to do with what was the position of the previous government. So it wasn't about what Labour ministers think about China. It was what did Conservative ministers and officials judge the threat to be in that previous period. Now, I can tell you what we think about China now. They do pose national security threats to the UK. But in relation to this case, it was not a decision of ministers. It was not a decision of Labour special advisers or anyone else within the political realm of the government. This was a question about the evidence provided by the CPS and the judgment they made under previous legislation no longer in force whether or not they thought they could secure a prosecution. I'm disappointed they weren't able to secure a prosecution. This situation should never arise again because the National Security Act was introduced in 2023. The questions are different and the evidential threshold is different.
Grateful for your input on that. Just finally, as a student of it, good luck with your conferences and your talks today, because we are watching history in the making here, aren't we, Minister?
We are, Nick. I find it very difficult not to be hugely moved by what we're seeing today, as I'm sure many of your listeners are. These are historic moments. I will endeavour to play my full part, as will all the other members of the government, but this is really a moment to savour, particularly for those hostage families and for those Palestinians.
Well, I'm wishing you nothing but Godspeed with what you take place in later today. I hope it goes well for you. Thank you, Minister for Middle East and North Africa, Hamish Faulkner, joining us here on LBC, taking us to 2 minutes before eight is the time. William is in Harrow. Thank you for hanging on the line, William. Back to Donald Trump. Donald Trump now. Meeting Benjamin Netanyahu at Ben Gurion Airport. The two men are speaking fairly animatedly, with the press crew obviously watching. We'll update you on that. William, is war over, as Donald Trump would say?
I think so. And I also agree with you about negativity. Today is a great day of rejoicing. It's also very sad. because a lot of families won't be having their loved ones coming home.
I know.
However, I do think Mr. Trump is missing one little chance here. He is going to declare himself chairman of the new peace board to run Gaza.
Right.
I think he should go into Gaza, not rush home today, arrange to go into Gaza tomorrow and walk a mile with the refugees as they try to find their homes in the rubble.
I mean, all I would say is the security implications would make that absolutely impossible. But what is the point? What would that demonstrate? What would that get the message that you want to get across, William?
Well, he's meeting the other side of the coin. 60,000 people have died. Children are still under the rubble. He's making a good impression, isn't he?
But isn't that what's to be done when he goes to Egypt and meets with all the other negotiators? Isn't that the point he makes there?
Yes, but this is all talk. He wants to meet... He's going to Israel and he's going to meet all the people. I'm quite right.
Yes, but then he will be going to Egypt after that and meeting negotiators and others. I know what you're saying, of course, but just the simple security of having him walk a mile through Gaza, I think it's a noble aim, but it's unattainable, I would suggest. William, the music means we move on. And coming up after the news, crisis with the Crown. Prince Andrew in that interview.
We decided that we would part company, and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him from that day forward.
Yes, you did. There was email contact and it's been proven. So what does that mean for Prince Andrew? And back here, it's 100 years since the birth of Margaret Thatcher. Iconic, totemic, whichever words you want to use that are usable on the radio. We'll assess her legacy. Those stories and more after the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Israel's military has taken custody of 7 living hostages freed by Hamas in Gaza. Tens of thousands of Israelis are watching the transfers at public screenings across the country, with a major event being held in Tel Aviv. Hamas is due to release a total of 20 living hostages this morning as part of the US-brokered ceasefire deal. Another group is expected to be freed in the next hour. LBC's correspondent Blake Sifton is in Tel Aviv.
They will be released likely in southern Gaza. This last group was released in the north. In terms of the bodies of deceased hostages, we understand that some will be released later today. However, it's believed that it will take much longer to retrieve the bodies of others. The Israelis understand that. So once all of the hostages who are expected to be released today, which is all of the living and a number of the dead, then Israel will begin releasing the Palestinian prisoners in exchange.
In the last half hour, Donald Trump has arrived in Israel, where he will address the country's parliament later. The US leader will then head to Egypt to lead a peace summit attended by leaders, including Sir Keir Starmer. Middle East Minister Hamish Faulkner has just been speaking to Nick.
The Prime Minister in Egypt will be rightly focused not just on welcoming this absolutely exceptional news, but on working on the really important questions in relation to what we're calling phase two of the 20-point plan. That includes some really difficult questions about the disarmament of Hamas, the reconstruction of Gaza, ensuring aid gets in.
Do stay with LBC for the latest and follow developments on the LBC app. In other news this morning, the Conservatives have stepped up calls for further details about the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Downing Street has strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution of 2 men facing espionage charges. President Trump's warned the US is considering providing Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Moscow has expressed extreme concern about the possibility of Kiev being given the long-range weapons. Leading economists have urged the Chancellor to avoid half-baked fixes in next month's budget. The Institute for Fiscal Studies has warned a dash for revenue risks damaging economic growth. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 94.27. It closed down 82 last week. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny across Scotland. A high of 18 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some brands sponsor athletes for the glory, but not Quaker. We're real food. So we sponsor Team GB for the real stuff, the ugly stuff. The 5 a.m. alarms, The blisters, bruises, goggle marks, and mountains of sweaty laundry. Because we know that getting to greatness takes a delicious helping of ugliness. And my word, our porridge is ugly. Look at the state of it. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after eight on Monday, October the 13th, the president has landed. For some of you, of course, it's the ego has landed in Israel and is on his way to address the Israeli parliament in the Knesset. Now, within the last 20 minutes or so, I asked UK Middle East Minister Hamish Faulkner whether Trump is deserving of the Nobel Peace Prize.
If we are able to see the ceasefire through and to the lasting peace in the Middle East that we all want to see, I mean, one Nobel Prize will not be enough, I think.
Watching now as President Trump is starting to get in his motorcade and drive off to the Knesset, and if it happens on our time, of course, you will hear that address. We'll hear what the President has to say. Back here in the UK, a crown in crisis. Prince Andrew wrote to Jeffrey Epstein, "We are in this together." That's the language he used with a convicted paedophile. Leave you to make your own minds on that. Row going on about the expression born and bred. Here's Reform UK councillor for Falkirk, Claire Mackie-Brown, speaking in a TV interview.
You know, there is a true unrest, and it's scary. It's scary as a local resident, somebody who's born and bred here. I shouldn't have said that.
Is it an offence to say that? And we look back, it was 100 years since the birth of...
He wanted the Commission to be the Executive, and he wanted the Council of Ministers to be the Senate. No! Yeah. No! Yeah. No!
100 years on, we'll gauge the political impact of one Margaret Thatcher.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Prince Andrew told the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, quotes, "We're in this together," the day after a picture of the royal embracing Virginie Giuffre was published back in 2011. The Duke of York issued words of encouragement to his friend in an email at a time when he claimed he had no contact with the financier. We go back to 2019, that disastrous interview. Prince Andrew speaking about ending contact with Jeffrey Epstein when it was revealed he, Epstein, was under investigation.
Well, I ceased contact with him after... I was aware that he was under investigation, and that was later on in 2006. And I wasn't in touch with him again until 2010. So it was one of those things that if somebody's going through that sort of thing. Well, I'm terribly sorry, I can't be.
No contact. When he was serving time, there was no call, no letter, nothing there.
No.
He then went on to discuss the final meeting he had with Jeffrey Epstein in December 2010 after he'd been released on home detention and why he decided to catch up with him in person.
I felt that doing it over the telephone was the chicken's way of doing it. I had to go and see him and talk to him. And I went to see him and I was doing a number of other things in New York at the time, and we had an opportunity to go for a walk in the park. And that was the conversation, coincidentally, that was photographed, which was when I said to him, I said, look, because of what has happened, I don't think it is appropriate that we should remain in contact. And by mutual agreement during that walk in the park, we decided that we would part company, and I left, I think it was the next day. And to this day, I never had any contact with him from that day forward.
And that has been blown apart by one of your newspapers yesterday, The Mail on Sunday, with its world-exclusive We Are In This Together. Here to give us the background to that and possibly give an indication as to what it means, Charlotte Griffiths, Editor-at-Large of The Mail on Sunday. Let's just back up a little bit. The copy that you were working with on Saturday that we all read yesterday in The Mail on Sunday, explain the high points or the low points of that. Charlotte, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I mean, the low points, I suppose, is the only way to put it, really. You know, the photograph came out, and Andrew's first reaction, pretty much within a day, was to write to Epstein and say, look, we're in this together. And I think what he meant by that was, oh, I've been caught in this photo. Looks like, you know, the trouble that you're in is now also the trouble that I'm in as well. And I found it very intriguing that his first reaction was not to say, oh my goodness, what is this fake photo of me going around? Because as we know from that 2019 interview on Newsnight, he wants us to believe that that photo was a fake. And to me, it felt very strange that he didn't mention anything about the photo being a fake in that email. And then he went on to say, you know, don't worry about me. You know, I'll be fine sort of thing, which makes me think he considers himself very much above the law, above the eye of scrutiny. And then later in the email, he said, don't worry, we'll rise above this. So he definitely thinks he's above something or that he's untouchable in some way. So it's incredibly unedifying. And as regards to what does it mean for him? Well, he's already, quote, invisible, or has been asked to be more or less invisible in the wake of the Fergie email, which came out only a month ago, in which Fergie wrote to Epstein and said, you are my supreme friend, when she was supposed to have cut off all contact. So it's a question of how can he be even more invisible? How can he embarrass the king somehow, embarrass the king less? I mean, I don't personally think it's possible. But he's got to find a way, and the king has got to seem to be incredibly harsh on him, because this is starting to bring drag the monarchy down.
Well, let's just finish with what he says in this note. He says to Epstein, and I lift this out, keep in touch, and we'll play some more soon, !! What does... Well, exactly. How do you react? I know what I'm thinking, and it's just grotesque.
It just makes me think these guys were play buddies, but instead of playing tennis, or squash or something, they played with girls. They had all this harem of girls around them all the time. And I think Andrew lost all perspective, because this is a man who'd been convicted of paedophilia, but obviously it was so normalized to them to be around all these 17-year-old, 16-year-old girls. He'd lost perspective on the fact that this guy's an actual paedophile. You know, these are young children, vulnerable girls who went from disadvantaged backgrounds, essentially, who are being trafficked across the world. It's extraordinary that he thinks they're playthings.
What do we understand to be the relationship between the king and his brother?
Well, I know that from William's perspective, he believes his father's a soft touch when it comes to his brother, because, you know, these are two men that are blood relatives. They grew up together. Mm-hmm. And so in the past, Charles has been somewhat lenient with him, I think. Particularly in recent years, he's let Fergie back into the fold. He's let Andrew appear at royal events, such as the Duchess of Kent's funeral. And in return, he's been humiliated by his brother. You know, for example, at the Duchess of Kent's funeral, his brother barged his way to the front of photos. He grimaced, he laughed. It was embarrassing for Charles, because Charles had let him in through a tiny chink, and he used that opportunity, you know, to take a mile rather than an inch. So I think the relationship with Charles and his brother was, in a way, too lenient. And I think now it needs to be more or less over.
What do you think will happen next?
I expect this week there will be something from Buckingham Palace, some sort of gesture, such as maybe a stronger stance on Andrew not coming to Christmas. At the moment, Buckingham Palace has asked Andrew to disinvite himself from Christmas. But I think something needs to happen more along the lines of Charles banning him and making a gesture of that. And then, of course, the big remaining thing is to get him out of Royal Lodge. His 30-room Grace and Favour massive house in Windsor, close to where William's based. And he needs to be out of there. He's got a lease that allows him to stay till 2078. But there's got to be some way to get him to exit himself from the lease, you know, to encourage Andrew to get real and have some self-awareness and do the honourable thing. And we know from Newsnight that Andrew considers himself very honourable. But this is actually quite a dishonourable thing to stick in Royal Lodge, embarrassing the royal family is out of order.
And just lastly, his behaviour, as you mentioned at the funeral, I believe it was last month, wasn't it? Completely out of any respect there should have been for the king, for the prince and others, when he tried to effectively put him in the front line, put himself in the front line.
And also for the Duchess of Kent, the poor late Duchess of Kent had her funeral overshadowed by his antics. And the other thing was, it was incredibly embarrassing for Prince William, because he kept trying to stand next to Prince William and talk to him, because he wanted that all-important press shot of William having an amiable conversation with him. Well, the opposite happened. William moved away from him, and actually Andrew then followed him, which was very embarrassing to watch. And the other thing William did was he did at one point, he had to speak to his uncle because his uncle was being so persistent. So he covered his face up. William covered his face up to whisper out of the corner of his mouth, because he did not want any images of him talking to his uncle, which goes to show how low this man has sunk. You know, people don't, his own nephew doesn't even want to have a conversation with him in public.
Charlotte Griffiths, editor-in-large at the Mail on Sunday. It was that paper that got away with this exclusive. Congratulations to the team working with you there. Just come home 14 minutes after eight. Quick word from Graham Smith, who's chief executive of Republic. Well, obviously this, for many, puts the royal family in a different light. Your reaction to this, Mr. Smith? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I mean, I think the conversation we just had is highlights part of the problem here, is that it's all about, apparently, all about image and embarrassing the royals. Now, it's not about that. This is a public institution. The public need to know what's going on. There needs to be an inquiry into this, because it beggars belief to think that William and Charles weren't already aware of this sort of detail, that they haven't been briefed, that if the Mail can find this email, that somehow the palace can't. You know, clearly there are answers to be questions to be answered. And, you know, Andrew was reported to the police by Virginia Giuffre in, was it 2000, 2001? The police refused to do anything about it. They've since been reported again, not least by me and others. And they continue to refuse to do anything about it. They have investigated sexual offence accusations going back 4 decades. They won't touch one that goes back 2.5 decades. They need to look at this and take it seriously. And this email is just part of a long pattern of Andrew clearly being dishonest about his relationship with Epstein. And 2 years ago, a Florida court released documents which suggested Andrew was also on Epstein's island in parties where there were girls under the age of 16. So, you know, there are other potential accusations of criminal offences going on here. There has been other accusations, allegations coming out of Andrew Lowney's book recently, and there have been suggestions that there's a lot more which hasn't been said because of the concern of publishers around you know, legal issues. But you know, so it can't be left in the hands of the royals. It's not about the king's embarrassment. It's about ethics. It's about standards in public life, and it's about criminality and accusations that need to be looked at and taken very seriously.
Who would handle the inquiry? Lastly, Mr. Smith, who would sit?
Well, I mean, there needs to be a police. There needs to be a police investigation. That's one, but I also think that MPs need to step up and start talking about this, because they have ignored this as much as they can. They don't want to touch it, and that is not okay. So this is why I'm saying everybody should be starting to write to the MP and say, this has to stop. It's been dragging on for at least 15 years now. The royals did nothing. They've always done the bare minimum. It took the interview on TV in 2019 for them to push him back further out of the limelight, again to save themselves embarrassment. I helped to organise a letter written by 150 ex-services that went to the Queen in 2022, which caused them to pull him back further. But he is still the Duke of York, he's still the Earl of Inverness, and he's still a Vice Admiral in the Royal Navy.
I will leave it there. Graham Smith, thank you. Chief Executive of Republic, we'll be looking in more detail at that and asking what now, what do you think the King needs to do as regards his errant and clearly lying brother? There's no other word for it. The man is lying. Fact. Also, we will return to the Middle East. Here are the scenes most recently in Hostages Square, Tel Aviv. It was relayed that the first 7 hostages had been freed. 8:17 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has arrived in Israel as Hamas continues to release hostages as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal. A peace summit attended by leaders, including Sir Keir Starmer, will be held in Egypt later. And the Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, called for answers and transparency about the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning sunnier in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the A405, the North Orbital Road at Brickett Wood, in both directions. It's partially blocked between the M25 and the M1 junction, so that's causing severe delays. The Rotherhithe Tunnel is closed both ways because a car has broken down, so that's causing delays both ways, especially back onto the A13 from Poplar. There are delays on the A2 westbound of at least half an hour up to the Kidbrook interchange after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are back open. In Carshalton, the High Street stays closed both both ways, and in West Kilburn, Kilburn Lane is closed both ways. On the train, South Eastern are running between Faversham and Gillingham, and Thames Link are suspended between Raynham and Gillingham.
This is LBC.
Why am I leaving a gift in my will to Cancer Research UK? After my wife Pam died from bowel cancer, I did everything to contribute to today's research, and now I can help fund the discoveries of tomorrow. Whilst Pam never met her grandchildren, leaving a legacy means that even when I'm not here, I can make a difference to their lives.
Gifts in Wills fund a third of our work, helping us develop life-changing cancer research. Visit cruk.org/giftsinwills. Together we are beating cancer.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and run.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
The McDonald's breakfast wrap. We could give you a delicious description, but instead, we'll just say that you can now play the Monopoly game at McDonald's with a breakfast wrap. Go on, it's your go. Served until 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Game ends 21st of October. App may be required. 18 plus. UK. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Crisis rocking the crown, Prince Andrew now proven to have lied on that television interview and maintaining contact with a dead well, he wasn't dead at the time, obviously, but with a disgraced paedophile who subsequently went on to take his life. Mick's in Newham. Mick, this is as bad as it can get, isn't it? Good morning.
It certainly is, Nick. Good morning. I was just really flabbergasted, actually, when I heard that that interview. And, you know, whilst Wadi sort of like always thought that something was not right about the original interview, was just, I think, more shocking, I think, and has been a revelation that have come out since. But I think what stuck in my mind, though, is I linked it with one of the other, many calls that you've held so far, Nick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's about these so-called concerned mums and Tony Robinson's mob. And if they're so concerned...
You mean Tommy Robinson, don't you?
That's right, yeah. I think that's what I said. Yeah.
No, you said Tony.
Oh, sorry, apologies.
No, that's my job. Go ahead. Yeah, Tommy, sorry, what's the point you're making?
Well, the point is this, is that, you know, we're all very, very, you know, all of us are concerned about, you know, any inappropriate behavior towards children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if these people are so concerned, you know, about this, why are they not protesting outside of Windsor Palace or wherever it is that Prince Andrew lives?
Well, he's not been charged with anything. There's no suggestion. Whereas, I sense what you're talking about is events at the Bell Hotel in Epping, where someone was charged and subsequently convicted of sexual offences. Prince Andrew, while he has associated with someone who has been convicted, there's no suggestion of, and we want to make this absolutely plain, there's no suggestion of any offence being brought against Prince Andrew. So you're not comparing like with like here, really, are you, Mick?
Well, no, I thank you for that, for that clarification. Sorry. However, the point is that, you know, when we're making those protests, which were, you know, quite valid against that specific person that was subsequently charged and convicted, as you said, they're already out there even long before all of that was. And, you know, it's almost as if they tried and already convicted him before, just upon hearsay at the time.
Well, it's a shocking look for the royal family, and when you consider that they're... whole business really is about image and the image they present to the world. What does the king need to do now with his brother?
Well, I think that one is a really, really tough one for the family, the royal family. That certainly is something that I think, you know, if actually Prince Andrew had, you know, just a modicum of decorum, he would have actually stepped down and stepped away himself.
I think that's right, but sadly we witnessed that at the funeral, and as the contributor was saying earlier, anything but. He seemed to want to almost force his way into the front row, trying to speak to his nephew, Prince William. He did briefly speak with his brother, the King, but it was one of those situations where you could plainly see on the faces of all the other members of the royal family, they just didn't want him there. Now, if he wants to pay respect to someone, obviously, who's he's known all his life, of course, but can't you go in towards the end of the service, you sit at the back, and then I'm sure if you're the Prince Andrew or Duke of York, you can say, I need to leave by a side door, and they'll find you one. And you just get in your chauffeur-driven car and you're driven off. You don't walk past with all the crowd, all the crowds who are waiting to see the decent members of the royal family. Mick, thanks for your input on that. Now, we go back again to the Mail on Sunday for another of their stories from yesterday. Again, one that caught the eye. Britain, the public sector in this country, spending £70 million a year on diversity officers as frontline services are stretched to breaking point. An audit of what's called EDI, Equality, Diversity, Inclusion spending across the NHS, the police and local authorities, shows the extraordinary amount of taxpayer cash being spent on some of these controversial roles. It comes in at £70 million. The piece was co-authored by Tom Kelly, who's investigations editor at the Daily Mail, joins me now. Share with my listeners some of your extraordinary findings, if you would, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, well, if you fancy a career change, there's obviously a lot of lucrative jobs going. Currently you could go for the head of Equity, Diversity and Inclusion at Gloucestershire Teaching NHS Foundation Trust, up to £68,000 a year. Does require a broad and deep understanding of barriers to change, prejudice and unconscious bias, and how to appropriately challenge and remove such barriers. So maybe that's one to consider.
They're not alone. Similar jobs in the Croydon Health Services, NH Trust, Newham Council's a belter, Belfast City Council and everything else. When you do the investigations, the work you did with Miles Dilworth, what is it these people, what are they recruited to effectively try and do then, Tom?
Well, I think the idea, if you were to take their case for it, is to make the workplace more inclusive, to try and improve conditions and in terms of the police, to try and help people out. I mean, certainly the NHS Confederation, who had the figure for £40 million for the NHS spending, claimed that far from being a drain, EDI, these equality, diversity and inclusion staff, is actually an investment that can improve workforce wellbeing and experience and enhance service design and delivery. So that's, you know, obviously their justification for it, effectively.
The bankrupt Labour-run Birmingham City Council made an interesting decision, didn't they?
Yes, just a year before going bankrupt, they advertised one of these positions at £100,000 a year. Now, of course, can't say that they went bankrupt because of this specific level. Obviously, many more factors, but it does give a kind of a indication as to where their priorities were and what the money was going on, which I think certainly raises questions about the choices the council have made, at the very least.
Now, in your article, you make it plain this covers the NHS, local authorities, police forces, police services. What happened when you and your colleague tried to contact them?
Well, I mean, they put up the defence. This is sort of, you know, investment. I mean, the police chief's council said, you know, we've got to make police more inclusive for everybody, and this is a way to do it. West Yorkshire Police, which have been one of the biggest spenders, they were in 2023-24 1.15 million. They've gone down a bit to just over £900,000 on it now, which, well, if we just can judge. But ironically, the big spending for them came a couple of years after their chief constable had been complaining about not having enough money to spend, you know, to basically do the job properly, not having enough staff to give the public the service they required. So again, I think some people will be asking questions about, you know, where the priorities lie or how they spend their money.
Tom Kelly is investigations editor at the Daily Mail. You carried out this piece in yesterday's Mail on Sunday with Miles Dilworth. Thank you for your input on that. The biggest spender by a country mile is £40 million for the NHS for a total of EDI jobs. £40 million a year. Goodness knows how many doctors that would pay for. Here's just one example. The EDI officer for Croydon Health Services, £43,466. The EDI team must work in a non-hierarchical way, must support the delivery and coordination of specific events such as LGBT History Month, Black History Month, Disability Awareness, International Women's Day and various others. Is that where the health service budget should be going? Leshmi is in Cardiff. Hello, Leshmi. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. A bit puzzled by this amount of money being spent in this field. What do you say?
I said, well, I'm actually the EDI lead for the South East Wales Royal College of GPs.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually ran a conference last month, an EDI conference for GPs.
Right.
But this position is voluntary, so I don't get paid anything for this.
Right.
And the conference didn't come out of the NHS budget. It came out of the Royal College of GPs budget and our membership fees.
What did you discuss at the conference you put together?
It was for GPs, and the workshops we ran were neurodiversity, transgender, and unconscious bias. And it was workshops that we discussed in GP and how we can improve that within medical our profession. So I'd be really keen on working with the groups in other local areas and patient groups to improve our sort of GP and patient sort of bridging the gap for EDI.
What did you learn?
It was fascinating for me because I did the transgender workshop, and obviously that's a hot topic in as a doctor, to be empathetic and understanding with our patients and ensuring that we get the language right.
Right, I mean, surely so, doctors, you are empathetic anyway.
We should.
Yes,
we are empathetic, but the language that you use with transgender patients, we have to be, obviously, older GPs are not as used to dealing with it. So, you know, how to address, you know, him, her, she, he, and how to say that and how to do it naturally to patients.
Is it that difficult then, Leshmi?
Not for me, no, but for older GPs who aren't used to introducing themselves as, hi, my name's Dr. Raj and she, her, that was just a really useful tip that we will now do forevermore, and that just shows patients that, you know, we're comfortable saying it. A lot of older GPs have never introduced themselves that way before.
So I meant to introduce, hello, I'm Dr. Ferrari, I'm he, him. Is that what I meant to say?
Yes.
How does that help me find out if the person's ill who's opposite me?
It just makes them feel more at ease, and often with transgender treatment within the NHS,
right.
In Wales, there is only one centre. So to know more about sort of how to improve the patient's
right.
illness and specific okay. to their transgender hormonal care is really important.
Lastly, should the government be spending £40 million of the NHS budget on matters such as these, Leshmi?
I think yes, but
goodness.
I'm biased because I'm not in charge of money, so I have no idea whether that's too much or not for the whole of the NHS. But I think it's a really great idea that EDI is becoming important because.
All right, okay. I'm going to say I can think of a better way of spending £40 million in the NHS than this. But let's see what our listeners make of it. Thank you for all your input and for the work you do as one of our fantastic doctors. Leshmi, thank you for your input. We'll stay with that. Coming up later in this hour, 100 years since the arrival of...
I have only one thing to say. You turn if you want to. The ladies, not for turning.
There will be events to mark the centenary of Margaret Thatcher, and we'll look at what she brought to British politics later in this hour. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News. Time, Thomas Watts.
The first seven hostages released as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal have arrived back in Israel. A total of 20 living captives are expected to be freed by Hamas this morning. President Trump has been greeted by the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, after arriving in Tel Aviv on Air Force One. He is set to address Israel's parliament before heading to Egypt for a peace summit. And the Conservatives say the Prime Minister must address unanswered questions about the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Downing Street has strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution of two men, including a former parliamentary researcher. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny in Scotland. A high of 18 degrees.
LBC.
Calling all little wildlife explorers. Playmobil is now in Happy Meal. Look, is that a seal? And a sea turtle? They've been around for millions of years, just like me. Which will your little ones discover? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 14th of October, from 11 a.m, Playmobil comprised toys only, subject to availability.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right.
Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and cafes.
Nuthatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nuthatch.com.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
8:33. Let's pick up then. £70 million. That's what we're paying for DEI or EDI. EDI, Equality, Diversity and Inclusion units, officers, and discussions and forums. Kevin's in Finchley. Kevin, do you think it's money well spent? Good morning,
Nick. As a male, I'm a man. If there was some kind of program to support women in the workplace, I might also giggle and laugh because I don't get it. Because guess what? I'm not a woman. Okay, so I understand how, you know, you and your Daily Mail colleague, you know, this is this kind of perennial story that comes up probably once a year on DEI, and giggling, oh, so funny, £70 million pounds on this ridiculous nonsense. Look, I am in a DEI within my company, but I do it free of charge. Now, guess what? You may want to be shocked at the six-figure sum that I'm paid for my job, which is in marketing, by the way. But I do the DEI bit free on the side in my own time. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, only I think last week you were talking about anti-Semitism in the NHS. Mm-hmm. And I think the week before that, we were speaking about, I think, Charing Cross Police Station with the absolutely disgusting racism held by police officers. So based on that, Nick Ferrari, is there a need for DEIB? Is there a need for, you know, training and informing people anti-Semitic?
I'd need to see it on a case-for-case basis. But if what you're talking about at Charing Cross Station, you could have £700 million worth of DEI. Those people would appear, and they await trial, but would appear, on the face of it, to be so vile that no amount of training will ever bring those people back. You could spend 10 times that amount, and I'm afraid it would appear that they have such vile sentiments within them, they're never going to be excised. So you're just wasting your money.
So you would suggest literally just doing nothing, then?
No, but I did say on a case-by-case basis. I'd need to see what it is. £40 million, some of which goes on International Pronouns Day. Now, I hope all of your family are well, but anyone listening now who's waiting for an operation or who's about to go into hospital, to them, the safe delivery of their medical care is more important than International Pronouns Day. And yet, we are in a situation where the NHS will spend, I don't have the sum, but will spend, it's going to be thousands, on International Pronouns Day, which for me is ludicrous.
Okay, well, you know, guess what? I'm sure that we can find really ridiculous, amounts being spent on anything.
Okay. Well, I've just found one of them, and to me, I say again, if we had a fantastically functioning health service where, God forbid, you could arrive in, I don't know what your local hospital would be, in Finchley, whatever it might be, the nearest general hospital, and you would be seen within half an hour, then fine, let's have Pronouns Day and as many either EDI or DEI, I don't know which is the correct one, as you like. But until we get there, I would argue the money could be better spent.
Okay, so based on that, and look, guess what? In a utopian world, which we're not ever going to have, I'd agree. Okay, so how do we deal with anti-Semitism then? You know, how do we stop doctors from being vile and racist to Jewish patients? How do we do
that? Well, again, I'm sorry, again, if you take the example from last week, where there was, and I won't say it again, the doctor who made that vile slur about a Jewish person, he was in his 50s and he lost his job. So you're never going to turn someone who's got evil, as the same as racism, who's got that sort of sentiment in him. You can have DEI days every day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. That's just inbred. It's in that man's DNA.
So again, what we're suggesting, and yes, you're right, no, he's vile, okay, it's ingrained, he's in his 50s, it's too late for him, okay, but there'll be people younger, you know, doctors coming up who may be impressed with his points of view, and if we can get them on the way up, say, look, guess what, anti-Semitism is wrong, you know, what's happening
what
in Israel,
Gaza, isn't that the role of a school?
Yes, you know, but we're talking about, you know, so Gen Alpha and Gen, and well, it's Gen Alpha now. Yes, you're focused on them. Gen Alpha's great. Hopefully they'll, you know, pull away from our, you know, I'm a Gen X. so, you know, but, you know, we need to hit people in the workplace. Unfortunately, we're not right. You know, we're not perfect. And look, you know, no, if it could be, you know, if there's a program that could, you know, get someone to say, you know what, you know, I can now identify and understand that that black woman over there, or that, you know, Muslim woman, you know, had a hijab pulled off, and, you know, that particular slur is wrong, and I'm going to give my colleagues a bit more respect, and I'm going to stop that anti-Semitism, you know, then let's do it. Let's.
All right. Well, I must do it by moving on. Kevin, thank you. Good luck with what you're doing in your private company. More calls coming in on this, but there is another story that I want to get across, and it is one that we've mentioned on a couple of occasions, and we can speak to someone about it. So this concerns a Reform UK councillor who's been left red-faced following an interview where she claimed it's scary as someone, quotes, who was born and bred here after being asked questions on asylum seekers. Let's go to the interview. The relevant councillor is Claire Mackie-Brown, being interviewed by STV's Vanessa Taffe regarding those protests.
People don't want answers about the local white boy who's done this that you are unaware of.
Because it's not known. If I don't know about it, how am I supposed to have an opinion on it or be able to ask questions? I don't have an answer to that. I'm trying my hardest to bring community cohesion. I've been overwhelmed with the contacts I've had from people within Falkirk. And, you know, there is a true unrest, and it's scary. It's scary as a local resident, somebody who was born and bred here. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, do you see why this is people sometimes think that Reform are very much against having people
that just
here?
It just came out.
That's unfortunate for you, I guess, but ultimately, do you see why people who aren't from here, who have maybe made their home here, are annoyed when they hear an elected official say that people are born and bred here?
Well, so the journalist was referring to two recent rape cases, Sadiq Nikzad and Riley Kirk. Anti-migration protests had taken place outside the Clathan Hotel in recent months after Nikzad was jailed in June. Councillor claiming locals were concerned about their safety, but when asked about Kirk, who was jailed for 8 years in June as well, the councillor said, "I didn't know anything about that. I don't even have a comment. I don't even know who that person is." And then, of course, we got into the idea of born and bred. Dr. Aaron Winter, Senior Lecturer in Sociology at Lancaster University, joins me now. Is this an expression, then, one must treat with caution? Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. I think Mackie Brown herself actually recognized to a certain degree that the phrase was problematic and would be read in a way that seemed both exclusionary and potentially racist.
Because?
Well, I don't want to speculate on why she might have recognized that, but I think when we're talking about a period in which there is an incredible backlash against migrants and Reform are beating that drum and widely seen as far right and racist, the idea of staking a claim unsolicited that I am born and bred here and I am scared of how things have changed and I'm scared of outsiders, then that by a politician, this is explicitly a political statement. It's not just a casual description of where you happen to be born.
So context is all in the context of this conversation.
Well, it's not just context. It's also perhaps in this case, intention, but also the impact it's going to have on people. We're at a period where we have people flying flags on not only every lamppost, but on zebra crossings, where people are staking their claim and saying, we are insiders, we are not only from here, but we are natural to this place, and you are an outsider, you don't belong, and you're a threat. So it's not just context, it's also the political kind of meaning of terms and phrases that are used for public audiences in the media.
why are people flying the flags?
Well, I'm not saying why they're flying it, but I do think the fact that we have a huge movement to fly flags at every possible place, be it on the ground or in the sky, is a statement about it's a nationalist statement. It's a statement about saying this is our place, our territory, and it's marking territory for insiders and outsiders.
And what's driving folk to do this?
Well, we're what, 15 years into an increasing backlash against migration, where we have virtually every major party pandering to the far right to be harsher and harsher on migrants, on Muslims, on people who are deemed outsiders, whether they're born here or not.
How are the political parties being harsh on Muslims?
We've had the mainstream of Islamophobia for over a decade.
Political parties. As far as I can see, political parties quite rightly do everything they can to try and stop Islamophobia, but you say they're encouraging it. How are they
stopping Islamophobia?
Well, quite rightly, you see photographs, and as you should, of the Prime Minister going and meeting with people in mosques whenever there are incidents such as those. Kemi Badenoch not doing exactly the same thing. Sir Ed Davey. Yeah, all the time. So how are they encouraging it?
I mean, look, Muslims are widely seen as a suspect community in this country. And to be perfectly honest, a photo op here and there is nothing but window dressing. The fact that we've decided, and I'm saying this as a Jewish person, that anti-Semitism is the one thing we need to educate the public and institutions on. But we're in a context in which far right rallies, marches, and so-called protests and riots are taking place that not only target asylum hotels or hotels housing asylum seekers, but mosques. And these are often claimed by the political parties, including the Prime Minister, as expressions of legitimate concerns. There is a conflation between, whether it's slippery or not, between migrants and Muslims. They're not talking about Romanian migrants.
But that woman was jailed for making inflammatory suggestions about a mosque, Doctor. You must recall that after the summer riots.
A woman. We have had over a year of protests and we've had riots. Right. You cannot possibly tell me that the arrest of a woman
Remember the number of attacks there have been on mosques. Fortunately, mercifully, it's very few. Right?
That's not a good thing.
No, of course it's a good thing. I hope there were none, but you make it sound as if it's happening on a regular basis, and it's not.
I never use the term regular basis, but the fact that there are many, many mosques being attacked and Muslims being harassed on the street, and we have counter-extremism and counter-terrorism...
You just said many mosques are being attacked. Well, remind me, many. Fortunately, there aren't, thank the Lord, or to whoever you pray, there aren't many. You're wrong. All right, we'll leave it there. Dr. Aaron Winter is a senior lecturer in sociology at Lancaster University. It's 8:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
President Trump has arrived in Israel as Hamas continues to release Israeli hostages held in Gaza. A total of 20 living captives are expected to be freed as part of the US-brokered ceasefire deal. Donald Trump will then head to Egypt for a peace summit attended by leaders including Sir Keir Starmer. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most, sunnier in Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays at the Rotherhithe Tunnel. It has just reopened both ways, but there are still severe delays on the A13 back into Shadwell. Also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise. This is at the Dartford Tunnel. It's because a lorry broke down earlier. Everything's been open for a while, but it's still very slow. In Carshorton, the High Street remains closed both ways. That's after an accident. And still very busy on the A405, the North Orbital Road at Brickett Wood. There are southbound queues on the M25 to the M1. And that's following an accident. On the train, South Eastern can't run between Faversham and Rochester, and Thameslink can't run between Raynham and Gillingham. It's because of an ongoing investigation.
This is LBC.
Can you hear that? It's the sound of billions of live cultures in Activia Kefir, our most diverse mix made with 16 strains, including probiotics, plus calcium. Because when your gut feels good, you feel good. Activia Kefir from Danone.
Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. Live cultures and yogurt improve lactose digestion of the product in individuals with difficulty digesting lactose. Enjoy as part of a balanced diet and lifestyle. Activia. Your gut is where it all begins.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Terms and annual fees apply. 18 plus. Subject to status. Basic card also available with no annual fee, rewards or other features.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Okay, it's 10 minutes before 9. I should tell you that we're continuing our conversation about events in the UK because nothing is actually moving forward. I hasten to add that it is all going in the right direction, but currently we don't know that any more hostages have yet been released. We're waiting for the US president to arrive at the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, where we understand he will be making an address probably within around 10 minutes or so. So the reason that we're focusing is that we're really just saying the same thing. The president has arrived there. There's joyous celebrations in Hostages Square in Tel Aviv. There are some celebrations in parts of Gaza. There are at least seven that we know have been handed over. The rest will continue. The Palestinian prisoners or hostages, whichever you prefer, are being rounded up. So it's pretty much as is expected. But if anything changes, and of course, as soon as the president starts speaking, we will go there. But that allows us to keep our conversation going about matters here, which is either the language deployed by a councillor up in Falkirk or these diversity jobs. Let's go to Michael in Chelmsford. You want to talk language, Michael? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
What do you want to say?
I've been been listening to LBC for a long time now.
Oh, thank you.
The other day, the question to be asked was, are you thinking of having children? That was being concocted into being a toxic question.
For whom? For whom is that a toxic question? Because it's not, doesn't appear to me in most instances.
No, it doesn't, does it? But the way it was portrayed in Tom Swarbrick's programme was that it's toxic. Just in case someone might not be able to have children, you've asked an innocent question and you're being damned for it.
And who was saying that? I doubt that was Tom, was it? I shouldn't think Tom was saying that, was he?
Well, it was pointing, it was giving oxygen to that idea, right. Basically.
Right.
And now we've got this IDE or whatever it is. It's telling people how to think.
Right.
Which is, to me, is fascist. Now, most people I know, if someone pushes them in a direction they don't want to go,
mm-hmm.
they'll push back twice as hard.
Right. If the direction they're going in is illegal, though, or is... Sorry? Then they need to know.
We're talking about... It's for example, you know... The pronouns they, them. Why? Well, I have multiple personalities. Mm. Well, we used to call that schizophrenia. Most people have got...
No, well, fortunately, that's the same as we used to put boys up chimneys. We have moved on and we have evolved, haven't we? And we know it's not schizophrenia and we afford them a degree of sympathy. Yeah?
Well, is it really?
Yes, I mean, yes it is. It is called being sympathetic, no, yes.
You don't do anything horrible to those people.
No,
you
don't
why would you
want to do something horrible to someone who wants to be addressed? I don't get it myself. I think there are far greater problems in the world. I'm very happy to be called him, he, him. I have all my life. I have no... But I'm not going to start doing something horrible to somebody who wants to be called them. I don't get it, but it's their choice. It's not going to change my world.
That's the point. That's the point I'm trying to make, Nick. No one's going to do it... Well, decent people aren't going to do anything horrible. But to be told that you aren't thinking right, to have thoughts that that's a little bit silly, that's where we're getting to now. We're going down a very dark hole where we're not going to be able to converse.
Well, we just have here, haven't we, lastly, Michael?
Friendship.
Haven't we? And you've said what you...
Sorry?
We just have, and you've said what you wanted to say, and you've made your points, and everyone's happy, no? Is that not right?
But this is how it's gleaned over, you know, and I'm not going to criticise you at all. I think you've got I think you've got a very centric sort of view on most points.
Well, I'm sure I get it wrong sometimes. We all do. At some point we do. Michael, thank you. I'm only finished because people have been holding on. Andrew in Chigwell. Andrew, you want to talk about these DEI roles. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I am a huge advocate and fan of yours. And as your last caller says, you usually get it right. Today, unfortunately, I'd say you definitely got it wrong.
Here we go. Tell me why I've got it wrong.
My background is, I was an investment banker, worked on the trading floor for 12 years, pre-financial crisis and post, as an Indian woman. And I can tell you in my experience, those words EDI didn't mean anything to me, right? I was raised by a single mother of four girls. We just thought we can do what we want in life. Mm-hmm. And if you work hard, meritocracy is real and you can get to your highest performance and the world's your oyster.
Yeah.
When really, in fact, that's not really how it worked. And yes, in the 12 years I was in my investment banking career, I did do very well by molding myself into a person that I couldn't even recognize by the end of it. And it got to the point.
What do you mean?
So effectively, acting like a man, I had to, during my maternity, I had a baby. Before my baby, when I was pregnant, I had to fly to Zurich, get a doctor's note when I was 8 months pregnant, just because my team couldn't understand what it meant to have antenatal appointments.
Hang on, you can't fly when you're 8 months pregnant, can you?
I know, I had to get a doctor's, the team weren't aware as to the experience of a woman going through pregnancy. In the same way, when I was on maternity leave and my clients weren't turning up to an event, I flew out, even though my daughter was 2 months old, to go to this event to be that present. But my point, what I'm trying to say is, okay, as a high performing work employee who just wants to get on with their job, unfortunately, environments don't always allow people to do that. And EDI, the role has been born for the mere fact to break down some of these systemic invisible barriers. To the point I quit my job, a very, very highly paid job, to actually set up a business on EDI to see it as a performance measure. So what that effectively means is, if you are in a working environment, your role as an employer is to extract the most out of your employees. So to do that, what you don't want to see is high attrition, you don't want to see burnout, you want to see people being able to perform to their highest potential. Unfortunately, what you see with a lot of underrepresented groups is they are unable to thrive to their highest potential. And that comes down to a lot of lack of empathy and understanding of the lived experience of others.
Can you give me an example?
An example of a lived... So I've just obviously shared one just then with you.
How someone is not able to reach their level because you sense they're being held back? A case... Yeah, obviously, someone you've worked with.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with it myself. I work with people on a daily basis. So a lack of understanding. So, okay, let's talk about the pronouns, right? The thing with transgender is it's a very, very, very small group of people. But let's delve into that group, because that's what's been brought up a lot in this morning. That's their person's identity. So, for instance, I've grown up with people calling my name wrong. I people have thought I was a man the whole time. Andrew. Not Andrew. Andrew is my name, but Andrew. So you get called Andrew again and again. You turn up to meetings and people constantly will be like, oh, we thought you were a boy. You thought you were a man. They're surprised by that. They won't actually even understand your technical ability. They will point to, they will credit you for all the things that are not like other colleagues. It won't be your technical ability. It will be either how you look, how your name sounds, and other parts which actually can make you feel more and more disintegrated within your team. You just don't feel like you belong. And the feeling
you
of belonging...
You just say that your name's Andrew, not Andrew, and then you get on with it, don't you?
No, but Nick, as a white man, who most probably has never had his name mispronounced...
No, you see, that's where you're wholly wrong. Because my first name isn't Nicholas, okay? Because I'm Italian. Well, I'm not, I'm Swiss, I'm sorry. You have no many times... You have no idea... You have no idea how many times I've been called a girl when I was a kid, and Nicola, because of the spelling of my name.
Hold on.
I just pointed out that I'm not Nicola. Look, I'll tell you my name. It's Nicola, okay? There you go. I don't normally share it. Same name as Machiavelli. Take from that what you like. So I said, no, I'm not actually Nicola. I'm not a girl. I'm a boy. Okay. I didn't then see some bias against me that I've nurtured my whole life.
Okay,
your first name actually doesn't hold at all, because I have been called Nicola when I was a kid more times than I can remember. And
but your question's flawed, Nick. Your question's flawed. Your question is flawed,
You just told me that you're, as Andrew, you are wrongly called Andrew. Well, I, as Nicola, was regularly called Nicola, because no one knows the word Niccolo. What's that all about? Not many people know Machiavelli. So... That's what, it doesn't matter. You either say, actually, I'm a boy and my name's Niccolo, or you say, oh, God, everyone thinks I'm Nicola, and you go on and it affects the rest of your life. You just don't do it, Andrew. Andrew?
First time I've ever called in.
Yes.
So your question is flawed in the fact that...
But why?
We both
have different first names. Not
I can tell you why.
No, not familiar with the English language, both of them.
If I can talk, I can tell you why. Would you allow me to talk, Nick?
Go ahead.
If you compound those experiences, we've talked about one experience, right? Imagine the equivalent of 30 of those happening within one day. And imagine that happening on a daily basis. And compounding that gets a feeling which actually doesn't allow people to show themselves in the best measures. There are studies that have shown...
If
you can allow me to even speak about it, I've got to get to the news, on that.
I just don't recognise it, Andrew. I'm sorry. I've lived it myself. It didn't happen.
You haven't lived. You talked about a mispronounced name. But we're not... You've asked to give one example. What I've said is, if you make 30 of those happen true for one person on a daily basis, that compounds to impact your performance.
I think I've got to go to Israel. So, and you be well. Let's get the news headline. It's 9 o'clock, LBC News.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the first Israeli hostages released as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal are set to be reunited with their families. A total of 20 living captives are expected to be freed by Hamas this morning. Hundreds of Palestinian detainees will be released in return. Simon Mabon, a professor of international politics, says it's a momentous day.
It's hugely significant. But I guess the bigger challenge is going to be what comes next. How is it that this Trump peace plan is going to be enacted? How are the various actors involved going to reconcile their long-standing and in some cases intractable differences? And I guess maybe that's a conversation for later on. Right now, this is a celebratory moment.
Donald Trump has arrived in Israel and will address the country's parliament, the Knesset, shortly. He will then head to Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt for a peace summit attended by leaders including Keir Starmer. Foreign Office Minister Hamish Faulkner has praised Mr. Trump's critical role.
I've been working on the Middle East a long time. It has been a conflict which has raged on and off the entirety of my adult life and the life of many of your listeners. If we are able to see this ceasefire through and to the lasting peace in the Middle East that we all want to see, I mean, one Nobel Prize will not be enough, I think.
Stay with LBC for the latest and follow live developments on the LBC app. There could be an emergency parliamentary debate on the collapse of a Chinese espionage trial. Downing Street's strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution of two men accused of spying for Beijing. But the Conservatives say there are unanswered questions for the Prime Minister to address. A woman is continuing to be held on suspicion of the murder of two children in Stafford. A two-year-old girl and a boy, who was three, were found in a property in the city yesterday morning. Legal claims against car makers accused of cheating emissions tests will be heard at the High Court later. Mass legal action is being held against manufacturers in the later stage of the so-called Dieselgate scandal. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.58. That's up 30. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, sunnier across Scotland later. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
It's another day at Screwfix, and Samo Farah is learning the ropes.
So, Mo, with Click and Collect, we get orders ready fast. So customers are out of here and back to their jobs in as little as 1 minute. What are you doing?
Deep lunches. It's my warm-up. I need to be in peak condition for when orders come in.
Love that intensity, Mo. Laser-focused. You might even have what it takes to beat my PB one day.
Back in a Mo.
Click and Collect in as little as 1 minute. Screwfix. No stopping you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine on Monday, October the 13th. Coming up, we expect President Trump to address the Israeli Knesset, and we'll bring that. So that's one political titan of our current times. For many, of course, today was the birth of a political titan of past times.
He wanted the Commission to be the executive, and he wanted the Council of Ministers to be the Senate. No. Yeah. No. Yeah. No.
Margaret Thatcher, born 100 years ago today, will assess her political legacy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To the Knesset, and I can tell you that slowly various people are making their way through what looks fairly formidable security, as you can imagine. There are plenty of security guards, and it would appear armed officers and police officers as well. Meanwhile, on Hostages Square, they are waiting. There's major screens, big screens have been put up there so that the President Trump's address can be broadcast there. And as far as we know, the exchange goes on, although I don't as yet have another number, so whether that has gone on and we don't have any numbers... The first number of 7 was given us to by the IDF. We haven't had an update on that, but there is nothing to suggest for you, those of you listening who have relatives, family or friends involved, there is nothing to suggest that there is any hindrance. It is all going through pretty much as was expected. So as soon as we hear from President Trump, obviously we will take you live to the Knesset. But here he is. The last really form of press conference he gave was as he boarded Air Force One before flying over from the US. This is where he said that the war is over.
This is the first time they've ever seen where everybody is unified, because as you know, we're going to Egypt after Israel, and we're going to meet all of the leaders of the very powerful and big countries and very rich countries. They're all into this deal. Everybody's into it.
Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, has not gone so far as to say the war is over. In your view, is the war between Israel and Hamas over?
War is over. The war is over. Okay. Do you understand that?
Now, as anyone who has worked on press conferences, on or around press conferences involving the president knows, he seems to keep to his own time frame, so he's already running late for this address. Then he's due to be in Egypt this afternoon, again coming to our time, 12:30, where he'll be joined with, among others, Sir Keir Starmer and French President Emmanuel Macron at the Sharm el-Sheikh, where they'll talk about peace in the region. But let's go back to events as he came over. On that same plane, he was asked, would he be open to visiting Gaza?
Would you ever visit Gaza?
I would, yeah, I would. I'd be proud to. I see it. I mean, I know it so well without visiting, but I do see it. Yeah, I would, actually. I'd like to do it. I'd like to put my feet on it, at least. But I think it's going to be a great miracle over the coming decades. And, you know, if you go too fast, that's not going to be good. You have to go at the right speed. Can't go too fast.
And it was about an hour ago that he landed at Ben Gurion Airport in Israel to a red carpet welcome and a guard of honor. The band drowning out the sound, which would have been, with the greatest respect to the band leader, I think we'd rather have heard the president speaking with Prime Minister Netanyahu, but instead we heard that band. And in the first hour of the show, coming back to the UK aspect, I spoke with Minister for the Middle East, Hamish Faulkner. I asked him for his assessment of what President Trump's contribution towards reaching peace in the region has been.
His role has been absolutely critical, Nick. He has clearly played a very important role in bringing both Hamas and the Israeli government to a point that we have long hoped for but has evaded us for months and months, which is a ceasefire, the release of hostages, the resumption of aid under the auspices of the United Nations, and all of the other elements that we're seeing on our TV screens today. President Trump has been absolutely vital. There have, of course, been other mediators too, Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey in particular, but the role of President Trump and his whole team has been vital.
He missed out on it this year, but should he be put up for a Nobel Peace Prize next year, Minister?
Honestly, Nick, I've been working on the Middle East a long time. It has been a conflict which has raged on and off the entirety of my adult life and the life of many of your listeners. If we are able to see this ceasefire through and to the lasting peace in the Middle East that we all want to see, I mean, one Nobel Prize will not be enough, I think.
I can tell you that since I've been talking to you, the second group of hostages has made their way. Now, I don't have the number. To remind you, of course, it is hoped that all 20 living hostages will be free today and the remains of the existing 28 hostages reunited with their families for appropriate burial. And on the other side, we're looking at around 2,000 Palestinian hostages or prisoners, of whom 250 have been convicted in some instances from severely serious crimes, that they will go ahead. I'm going to start taking your calls with the advance notice that if the President suddenly starts speaking, I will break off. But the President has arrived in the Knesset, but he's meeting, as we speak, with Benjamin Netanyahu and other senior members prior to his address. Gary's in Glossop. Gary, thank you very much for calling in. Well, after all the speeches, after the ceremony, what needs to happen next? Good morning.
They need to do exactly what they've said they'd do. And I think President Trump needs actually two awards because you can bet your life he's already on with the Russian and Ukraine. And by the sound of it, he's going to do it, you know. But all
certainly he's achieved a lot in the Middle East, without doubt. What makes you think he's going to achieve something in the Ukraine area, Gary?
Trump's a businessman. Money drives him. He wants his uranium, oil and gas out. If the Russians don't play ball, he'll put foots on the ground, boots on the... But not army boots, construction boots. And they'll start stripping the Donbass of all their... all their wealth.
I don't see Vladimir Putin allowing that, Gary. He's not just going to stand back and watch that happen, is he?
He won't bomb civilians. He won't attack the civilians. Mm-hmm. It's not army personnel.
Putin wouldn't... If you're suggesting that Donald Trump was suddenly to put in a load of what you call construction workers, of course Putin would fight him. He's not going to let that happen, is he?
Well, it's a different ball game then, attacking innocent people, you know. It's not a military threat.
All right. Okay. Your assessment of what Trump's achieved in the Middle East?
Yeah. What I rang in about, it's absolutely fantastic. But can I just say, there's talks of China rebuilding Gaza. Surely we've got the biggest untapped workforce currently living in hotels. Is it above them, young, fit, working-age men to be sent out over, let them work 5 years out in Gaza, and then we'll think about letting them in?
All right, okay, let's just go over to... Thank you for your input. Let's go over to the Knesset. We've just seen the President write a message in a book in which he talks about this is a great day and a great honour. He was flanked by Benjamin Netanyahu and others. He's also talking about how this is a new beginning for the region. That will, of course, be borne out by the talks that take place later today. I remind you, all the Arab parties that have been involved in getting us to this peace, as well as, of course, Turkey and the UK and the US and Italy and other countries will be represented. He's just written an inscription, as I say, in this book, talking about this being a great day and a new beginning. The President is now making his way towards the Knesset, where he will eventually give some form of address. Let's go back to what we do know. We now know that Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in Egypt, so he's safely touched down there. There are unfortunately reported, though, clashes in some parts of Gaza. Now, this speaks to there are some militias or some heavily armed gangs that are operating in parts of the region of Hamas, of Gaza, that Hamas are seeking to eliminate. And there have been reports of extensive gunfire overnight in certain regions. Now, of course, there's a lot of arms around in the area, and that's why these gangs have been able to avail themselves and why these clashes have continued. That is something that's going to have to be addressed as they put together this idea of this sort of peace forces. It will be this peace council, which is likely to feature, the chairman of the board will be one Donald J. Trump, but it's likely to feature former British Prime Minister Sir Tony Blair. Now, this is seen as a result of the amount of time he's put in there. He was, of course, a Middle East peace envoy. He knows how many of the people involved. He knows them, and he's able to address them on first-name terms. So that's why he's seen as being so crucial. The rest of the completion of that committee is crucial, again, that they have local Palestinians involved, because if there's no one from the area who's working on it, it's going to be very, very difficult to see how it can possibly go forward. To tell you what's happening to the hostages that have been released, they're driven to a military base initially to see their families, and then an assessment is made of whether they can spend more time with their families or whether they need to go for immediate medical care. The remains of the hostages are expected to be sent to what's called the Institute of Forensic Medicine for identification. It is feared that not all of the remaining remains will be found, and then the specialist teams are going to have to be sent in to parts of Gaza to try and identify where those bodies might be. An unnamed Hamas official has told Al Jazeera that the living hostages had been gathered in Gaza in one particular place, and the militant group would work with the Red Cross to agree on the logistics of their release. As I said, there are 48 hostages, 20 of whom hopefully are still alive. On the other side, some 2,000 Palestinian detainees will be released, the vast majority of whom are sent to Gaza or would then be sent to neighbouring countries once all the Israeli hostages are back on the soil. Several Hamas commanders, prominent Palestinian political figures and doctors whose releases were requested by Hamas have not been put on the list of Palestinians to be freed. And there is already considerable discord from the Palestinian side because some of the people they identified as wanting back have not been included on the Israeli list. Is it a great day? Shrivan in Hemel Hempstead. The president's just told us it's a great day. It's a day of great and a great day of great honour. Would you agree with him? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. I completely disagree. I wish I was there at this meeting. I would stand up and say it's not a great day.
What is it in your book?
This peace deal could have been done 18 months ago, Nick. 18 months ago, the Sunday Times reported this weekend that this is the same deal that could have been 18 months ago. This is not a great day.
You're
it's
wrong.
It's a day of... No. Can I please finish?
I think you're wrong because...
No, can I finish?
Yes, all right, go ahead.
Can I finish my point? Forgive me, Nick.
Go ahead.
This is a day of cowardice. For 18 months, the world stood by, the whole world stood by, with all this barbarity continuing. All this, but this is not a great day. This is a day of cowardice of all the delegates there.
Can I ask a question? Why have Hamas agreed to give the hostages back?
No, I don't care about Hamas. They are absolute liability. It's good if they give. Please, don't get me wrong, Nick. They can give the hostages back.
Can I ask you, Shivan, why do you suppose Hamas have given the hostage or are in the process of giving back the hostages?
It's a deal. Don't get me wrong. It's a deal. But in my observation, it's not a great day.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Imagine if you were one of the hostages' families or if you were one of the Palestinian prisoners or hostages' families. Wouldn't that be a great day for you?
No, Nick, it's relief for the people. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about the leaders there. All this grandstanding, this conspiring, God knows what they were talking behind the closed doors. For 18 months, this deal could have been done before Sunday Times is reporting.
You keep saying that, but Shivan, let me ask you, why have Hamas handed the hostages back now? They didn't 18 months ago. Why are they now?
They're
doing it now because President Trump has told them, was made it quite plain, that unless they agreed to this deal, his 20-point plan, he would look away and Netanyahu do what he saw fit. And that was the dynamic change there.
Nick, they could have done it 18 months ago if they signed it.
All right, respectfully, we are going round in circles. You keep saying they could have done it 18 months ago.
Yes.
I keep telling you that they couldn't because they didn't hand the hostages back 18 months ago.
They could have done it. No, the deal...
All right. If they couldn't do it, why didn't they do it then?
No, there was a deal done, but the Biden was not the one ready to... He was the one
I think we... I'm grateful for your view. We're going around in circles because I think, and many would agree, that it's the dynamic that President Trump brought. That's why it couldn't happen 18 months ago. While we try and assess exactly what's happening at the Knesset, because obviously the President isn't speaking, we'll bring it to you as soon as he does. Let's pick up on some LBC News headlines. It's 9:17 to the newsroom and Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump is in Israel to address the country's parliament. The first Israeli hostages released as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal are set to be reunited with their families. And later, the president will head to Egypt for a peace summit attended by leaders including Sir Keir Starmer. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for many, a high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. It's still very slow on the A13 heading towards the Rotherhithe Tunnel, and that's because a car broke down earlier in the tunnel. Everything's open now, but it's still very slow. In Carl Shorten, the High Street remains closed both ways. That's because of an accident. The investigation works are still taking place, and there are lengthy delays in the area. Also, delays on the A405, which is the North Orbital Road, southbound at Brickett Wood. It's slow from the M25 to the M1, and that's all down to an accident. Also, the problems on the trains continue. Southeast are not running between Faversham and Rochester, and Thameslink can't run between Raynham and Gillingham. It's because of an ongoing investigation.
This is LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace, and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
Okay, here's what we know. Reuters are reporting that the second group of hostages, numbering 13, has been, or is on its way back, I should say, on its way back via the Red Cross. So that does take us to the 20 that we said right at the top. We're still waiting for the American president to address the Knesset. I said earlier that if ever you followed him, as I have in the States, and also here, sitting here watching him give press conferences across Europe, he, for whatever reason, he very, very rarely is on the clock, and he's way off the clock already. He's 20 minutes late from when he should have been speaking, and that, of course, then puts into jeopardy, I would have thought, him getting to Egypt in time for that 2:30 our time, 2:30 press conference involving Sir Keir Starmer, the Italian Prime Minister, the French President, and others. So that's what we do know. As I told you already, Sir Keir has arrived in Egypt. We now can share with you exactly what President Trump wrote in that book and then held up for the photo call. This is a great honour, a great and beautiful day, a new beginning. Also, of course, point coming out some of the negotiations that have gone behind the scenes. They're very keen to go over to Egypt to talk, because this is where some of the key negotiations were done, and it's being reported that when Hamas arrived for those negotiations, they were far more malleable than they had been in the past. Mr. Trump, or Donald Trump, President Trump's 20-point plan, therefore made considerable more ground. Now, the deal on offer for Hamas fell far short of their initial hopes. It's reported even Arab officials were dismayed by how one-sided Trump's plan had become. Revisions to the draft hardened demands for Hamas's unconditional disarmament, while allowing Israel to maintain a military presence in the Strip. It was, as one commentator said, less a ceasefire deal, more an ultimatum to surrender. But the regional powers were determined to hold Hamas to it, a point made in forceful terms as the group's delegates gathered in Egypt. Never had they faced such unity from regional powers. And again, it is reported, obviously there's no Hamas official who's ever going to speak to this, but when Hamas realised how there was now such almost one determined block, including Qatar, Turkey and other Arab states, there was really no direction for them to go. So to the idea that this Trump plan, is it perfect? No, it's not. Not in any stretch. But has it proved the key moment? Well, without doubt it has. As I said, those talks took place last week in Sharm el-Sheikh, with Israel obviously attending those as well. Now, what happens is the key, and this will not be for today, but it will be for tomorrow, or indeed the coming weeks, is exactly where that line is drawn. Now, we've talked about how there will be this sort of council, an international, what's called an international trusteeship or council, effectively chaired by Donald Trump, and also having Sir Tony Blair, the former British Prime Minister, in a key position. But the first phase has proved less contentious. What now mediators are going to have to work with, of course, and as we've referenced in our conversations, is where the line will be drawn, exactly how, what the new territory will look like, and, of course, what role the IDF are allowed to play. They have to withdraw to a certain line that has yet to be determined. Let's go to Hostages Square in Tel Aviv. It's sort of effectively been called that now. Celebrations have been ringing out in the morning, and giant video screens have been erected around the square. This is as they watch developments, and, of course, in some instances, friends and family wait to see their loved ones possibly pop up on the screen. Now, one of the hostages who has been released is 21-year-old Nimrod Cohen. He was abducted while defending the kibbutz near him with his tank crew on October the 7th. His mother, Vicky, recorded this message on her way to meet with him.
I'm on my way to Reim to meet my son, Nimrod. After more than 2 years, I'm so excited. I'm full of happiness. And it's hard to imagine how I feel this moment. I didn't sleep all night, and I'm on my way to Reim. Thank you for everyone, all the people here in Israel and around the world that fight with us for this moment.
As all parties agree, the real, although notwithstanding the extraordinary hard work that's gone into bringing this peace deal about, the real hard work will begin, of course, in the coming days and weeks when they have to determine exactly where that boundary will be and how Hamas is to be and how Gaza is to be policed. Now, as I told you earlier in this hour, unfortunately, there are many armed militia now operating in parts of Gaza, not all of Gaza. And this has, although aid is flowing in, both physical aid and medical aid as well needed for the hospitals, again, some of that is regrettably being effectively stolen or pirated away and then being sold on in some instances. Again, something that this is going to have to, this holding committee is going to have to determine. But coming back to what was really been effectively this two-year conflict, at the initial point of it, observers or commentators point out how crucial the hostages proved to be, because that's what started the traction for Hamas. But also, it was realised that, according to some Arab and Western diplomats, in the end, in fact, it could be seen that the hostages were a problem from Hamas, because they'd become, again, some commentators would say, somewhat of a liability. This meant that even Arab states who were sympathetic to Hamas's cause started to grow increasingly exasperated with their intransigence and were starting to rally behind the US and what it wanted to achieve in the region. Then you bring in the position of such a dynamic president with a 20-point plan, and suddenly you realise why it has changed so much. Let's turn to some of the emails and social media that's coming in. Again, we have got eyes on the Knesset, on the Israeli parliament, and as soon as President Trump... I'm just quickly looking across. No, we haven't even got the main attendees yet, so I think we're probably some ways off that yet. Right, this is what you're saying on the social media and on the text. Florian says, I'm afraid Hamas will still do something very wrong. Israel needs to stay on high alert. Same subject. This comes in from Sufyan. The British are the last people who should have any say in what happens in Israel now. They're partly to blame for the state of the country. You call it peace. I call it a land grab. The wealthiest people in the world are taking over a valued piece of land for their own financial gains. Let's get some calls. Oh, Matt Fry. I can join now by Matt Fry, my LBC colleague. Saturdays from 10, and of course from Channel 4 News. We wait and we watch. What is the significance of where Trump goes after this and goes off to Egypt? Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's all pretty significant, isn't it? Although it's a whirlwind tour. I mean, first of all, addressing the Israeli Knesset is significant. He didn't get to address the British Parliament, but he will address the Israeli Knesset. And if he were to run for an election today in Israel, he would be prime minister in a heartbeat. So he's a very popular man in Israel because he's managed to break the logjam. Whether you like Netanyahu or you hate him, and the country is pretty roughly divided on that matter in a very visceral way, it is Trump's kind of, you know, juggernaut diplomacy that has managed to make today happen. Yeah, there's no doubt about that whatsoever. The Sharm el-Sheikh conference, which, of course, is where the, you know, the peace talks have been taking place, brokered by the Egyptians. You know, it's a wonderful seaside resort on the Red Sea, and it's known for its kind of peacey vibes. The point of that one is to kind of, it's partly victory lab, partly bringing together all the parties that were involved in this, the Qataris, the Egyptians, the United Arab Emirates, the Saudis as well, and of course Israel, and then the Palestinians. The point of that is to kind of make sure that this isn't just one big moment and one big photo opportunity, but that there's a follow-up with a real plan, not just for security of Gaza, but also for rebuilding Gaza. Because imagine if you're a Gazan and you've been moved by Israeli bombardment 6-7 times in the last 2 years, and you're finally allowed to go back to what was your home, and you find a pile of rubble, perhaps some of your family still buried underneath, you're going to be pretty upset. So I think there has to be, you know, there has to be a lot of trust that's going to be rebuilt. And frankly, speaking to, you know, to experts, diplomats have been doing this for years, sometimes successfully. I had one on my program on Saturday on LBC, Peter Hain, who helped to broker the Good Friday Agreement. I said, one out of 10, how optimistic are you? And he said, a 2 at best.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, when you consider, we still have to, or they still have to determine where the line will be, how exactly Gaza will be policed, once the trusteeship moves on, what the future governance of Gaza will, I mean, the hard work starts now in a way, Matt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the story of the Middle East and the Arab-Israeli conflict is one of promises broken and trust denied. This happens over and over again, and both sides are to blame, and we can shout at the radio and talk about whether one side is to blame more than the other. Let's just call it tabula rasa. We'll start from, you know, a blank slate, if that's possible, and let's start again. Physically rebuilding Gaza should be, if there's money available and people, you know, are safe to work in the environment, which one hopes is the case, that should be quite, you know, a matter of years rather than decades. But then rebuilding the trust, you know, making Israelis feel that whatever happens in Gaza now is not going to threaten them the way it did on October the 7th, and making Palestinians crucially feel that the Israelis will finally give them a chance at self-determination, which, yes, means a Palestinian state down the road. That's the really crucial thing. And I think, I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I used to live in Israel. My first ever job was the Gaza Strip stringer for the BBC Arabic service. And some of the problems that we have today were evident then. But I would always say the two people most alike in the Middle East, and neither side like to hear this, are the Arabs, are the Israelis and the Palestinians. They have a high level of education. They've been displaced. They've been messed around by their supposed friends and neighbors. They have a large diaspora. And I think, you know, at some stage one hopes that they find a way of sharing this small bit of real estate, whether you have to share the bathroom and you have to share the kitchen with the one, you know, with a single hob. It's not super luxury. It ain't the 5-star hotel, Nick, but that is the only viable alternative there exists.
Always enjoy chatting with you. Thanks so much for your input, Matt Fry, my LBC colleague. Saturdays from 10 in the morning, of course, you find him on Channel 4 as well. We're going to go to a news update now, with the caveat, of course, that if President Trump does start speaking, we'll cut him. But it is 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. Let's get those headlines. Thomas Watts.
Israeli media say a second group of hostages has been handed over to the Red Cross in Gaza. It means Hamas has transferred all 20 remaining living captives as part of the US-led ceasefire agreement. Donald Trump is about to address the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. He'll then head to Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt for a peace summit attended by leaders including Keir Starmer. The Tories say ministers must answer questions in the Commons about the collapse of a spying trial. Downing Street has strongly rejected suggestions it spiked the prosecution of two men who denied spying for Beijing. LBC weather dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny across Scotland, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
9:33, we're still looking at the Knesset. So as the world waits and watches for one international politician to get onto the stage, let's come back to the UK and remember it's 100 years since the birth of another politician who certainly bestrode the world stage, whether you liked or loathed it, from the poll tax to the Falklands War. Margaret Thatcher's legacy, though divisive, can still be felt across politics today. LBC's Henry Riley looks back at an extraordinary career.
I have only one thing to say. You turn if you want to. The ladies, not for turning.
100 years ago today, Margaret Hilda Roberts was born above the family corner shop in Grantham. Her father, Alfred, a Methodist lay preacher, and mother, Beatrice, a housewife.
My whole upbringing was you must be independent. You know, you must take responsibility for your own actions. Certainly you must help others.
She went on to read chemistry and law at Oxford, and over the next 20 years married Dennis and became the MP for Finchley, later serving as education secretary, or as critics dubbed her, the milk snatcher.
Now, most parents can afford to provide their own children with milk or to give them money to buy milk.
And that propensity for not shunning the difficult choices propelled Thatcher into Downing Street.
Where there is discord, may we bring harmony. Where there is error, may we bring truth. Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
A clear mandate for a woman in a hurry as she embarked upon a radical programme of privatisation and deregulation, reform of trade unions and tax cuts.
This government has rolled back the frontiers of the state and will roll them back still further. And it works.
Introducing the controversial right to buy scheme and in 1982 spearheading British victory in the Falklands War.
Just rejoice at that news and congratulate our forces and the Marines.
She cemented herself as the Iron Lady, with that image depicted across popular culture.
I will have a steak.
How'd you like it?
Oh, raw, please.
And what about the vegetables?
Oh, they'll have the same as me.
And on the international stage, garnering huge respect from world leaders, including President Reagan.
Hello, Margaret Thatcher.
If I were there, Margaret, I'd throw my hat in the door before I came in.
After her second general election win in 1983, she nearly lost her life just a year later.
The Irish Republican Army tried to assassinate the entire British cabinet. They almost succeeded.
And it was in the latter years after her third election win that difficulties emerged. Poll tax riots on the streets saw hundreds arrested and injured. She was eventually removed from power.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're leaving Downing Street for the last time after 11 and a half wonderful years.
The longest serving PM for over 150 years. She continued to play a key role after her time in office. Her legacy still bitterly divides, but remains.
There is no such thing as public money. There is only taxpayers' money.
And that was Margaret Thatcher's speech to the 1983 Conservative Party conference, concluding Henry Riley's report. Let's turn to Sir Anthony Seldon, contemporary historian, leading political biographer, author of Britain Under Thatcher, and another book coming out later this month, which we'll address in a moment. Sir Anthony, had there not been a Margaret Thatcher, how would Britain have developed without her? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Very different. I mean, impossible to know, but very different. She was a forthright leader, Nick, and that's exactly why she is so remembered today and why there hasn't been a prime minister who's had that same impact, and why so many people look back 35 years after she stood down on her as a true leader. She did not rely on focus groups and opinion polls to tell her what to do. She knew what she wanted to do. She had principles, beliefs, and like her or loathe her, she did what she thought was the right thing to do.
What were the ingredients in the Petri dish that gave us Margaret Thatcher?
Well, I think that the background, her Christian faith, her background as a chemist, she saw things quite clearly in black or white. She was formidably clever, and she was a person of conviction, Nick. And I think that if you look back at British history, all the great prime ministers, they knew their own minds. They knew where they were leading the country. And what's happened since is that focus groups, political advisors and others have come in, and it's all become much less clear what the prime minister believes in. She knew, I mean, like Donald Trump, I mean, another very controversial figure, no one could doubt that Donald Trump is a leader. You know what he believes in. You know where he's taking his country. They were very different people, but similar in that way.
Could a Mrs. Thatcher operate today, 24-hour media, social media, the toxicity that is abroad? How would a Margaret Thatcher today fare, Sir Anthony?
Precisely as she did, Nick. She wouldn't have been on social media. She wouldn't be listening to focus groups. She wouldn't be concerned endlessly about tomorrow's headlines or opinion polls. She knew what the right thing to do, and she led. She said, this is what I believe in. This is where we're going to go. So I think even more, with so much, so many divergent views, so much lack of clarity, we need to know what we think about Russia and what we think about abuse of power and the values of liberty and freedom in the West. She was very clear about this, and many people loved her for it, and many people, as you suggested, didn't like it, but people knew where she stood.
Last minute or so together, Sir Anthony, you are a best-selling author, you're a contemporary historian. Are we watching history play out in Israel today?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, this is an extraordinary moment. We don't know where it's going to go. We'll remember President Bush saying the Gulf, the war in Iraq was over, a victory done. So we have to be cautious. We all hope for the best. But historic, yes, definitely. We are witnessing history before our eyes.
All right, before I let you go, a new book coming out later this month, The Path of Light, Walking to Auschwitz. Briefly, Sir Anthony, what will that tell my listeners?
It will tell them who the good people were in the Second World War. We've heard a lot, too much about the dreadful people, Hitler, Himmler, Goebbels. There were many extraordinary women and men on all sides who fought for their beliefs, stood up against evil, Nazism, often lost their lives, and people whose lives we need desperately today to have role models who are fundamentally good human beings, Nick.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Best wishes to you. Thank you, Sir Anthony. Sir Anthony Seldon, contemporary historian, leading political biographer, and author of Britain Under Thatcher. Actually, I recall that at Margaret Thatcher's state funeral, Sir Anthony was part of the coverage team that I had on LBC on that day. His new book, The Path of Light, Walking to Auschwitz, had to wait a little bit, out on the 30th of this month. All right, let's pause coming in. Obviously, let me tell you straight away, if President Trump starts speaking in Jerusalem, of course we will cross there, but effectively we're no closer than we were when we started, when we hoped to be with us about 41 minutes ago. Sean's in Tavistock to talk about Margaret Thatcher. Sean, you're on the radio. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick, and all your listeners, and peace to the Middle East. That's what I'm saying.
Good idea. All for that.
I coined a phrase years ago, she turned borough boys into bond dealers, Margaret Thatcher. she kicked down the fence for people like me from a slum house into the corporate sector when I come out of the army. I formed a business. It was all down to Margaret. She allowed people like me into the corporate sector.
What had stopped you before? When you say she allowed you, what were the obstacles that she helped clear, would you say, Sean?
Snobbery, Nick. We wasn't allowed to go into that world. Computer suits was not the working class. It was overalls, working class work, clock in, clock out, under the old socialist system. We weren't given that opportunity. She was raised in a corner shop. She recognised poverty. She had an outside laboratory like we did. She was poor, but she wanted to get on. And her father said, don't be reliant on the state. And I've just been driven by that, really. She was wonderful.
But there are many people listening and saying, Sean, for heaven's sake, she was down on the poor. She took the milk away. She destroyed the mine. She increased child poverty. They would say, you don't know what you're talking about, Sean.
Nick, a tough matriarch gets things done, right?
Yeah.
A tough woman. She had to reorder her society post the nonsense of socialism. What died in 1976, by the way, were the IMF. It's never recovered socialism. This is why we're in a mess now with Starmer. But what she also did was have a guy called Bernard Ingram. It was an all-nonsense Yorkshireman.
Who
would not let her tell lies and spin anything. He'd pull her straight away. She wouldn't do it anyway. Now, you've got Starmer saying we're a nation of strangers because he was told to say it by McSweeney. They went to withdraw because he read the script wrong.
Lastly, how would she view the United Kingdom in 2025 if she was still with us?
I think she'd be uncomfortable because she was very proud to be British. And I don't wholly support her on this. I'm more inclusive, mate. I'm not a Farage supporter. She's a bit like Nigel Farage. She doesn't bring people together like she should do. That's my one criticism of her. And she also didn't build enough council houses. We bought her council house thanks to her when we were growing up. But she should have replaced them like Macmillan did. So she wasn't perfect, Margaret wasn't. I'm not sugarcoating her. But she's in a force for good in a bad world. She gave me a chance and a hope.
Sean, nice way to finish. Thank you. She wasn't. She achieved so much. But you're right. The policy of the not filling in the council house, the sale was fantastic for folks such as your mum and dad. Brilliant. They became property owners. But we didn't backfill behind. And the other one, which I'm afraid she brought in, and other governments have followed, the sale of school property, school land, was absolutely disastrous. And that's why, in part, we have probably such unhealthy children. We may continue our conversation concerning Margaret Thatcher. Certainly, we might be going, but I've got a sense it's not going to be happening as often on my watch, President Trump to address the Knesset. But we'll see after the 9:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Hamas says it has now released all the remaining living Israeli hostages held in Gaza as part of the US-led ceasefire deal. President Trump is in Israel to address the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. He will then head to Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt for a peace summit attended by leaders including Sir Keir Starmer. LBC weather. Dry and cloudy for most places. Sunnier in Scotland. A high of 18 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays in Carl Shorten. The High Street remains closed both ways, and that's after an accident. Also very busy in Holloway. The Seven Sisters Road is closed from the Hornsey Road, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. Also delays in Bexley Heath. Bourne Road is partially blocked northbound at the A2 junction because a car has broken down. On the trains, Gatwick Express services are suspended, and that's because the overnight works at Clapham Junction are still taking place. Also, Southern are delayed by about 45 minutes between Victoria and Balham. And train services between Faversham and Rochester are now running, but with delays.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
As Donald Trump prepares to address the Knesset, some people are struggling to reconcile an awful person doing a wonderful thing. Are you?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Do you want to stay active but feel the need to slow down? New 7Seas Joint Care Plus Turmeric contains a capsule filled with the UK's number one omega-3, combined with glucosamine and a tablet containing turmeric. Plus vitamin C to support cartilage, D for the maintenance of bones and muscles, and manganese to support connective tissue. To support your active lifestyle, try 7Seas Joint Care today. Food supplements must not substitute a balanced diet and healthy lifestyle. Verify at 7seas.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At
Lidl, we value the variety of life. It's why we're introducing £4 for £2 on 8 Lidl bakery favourites with Lidl Plaques. You can mix your twists with your turnovers, create a croissant supergroup, or just nab a whole bag of pecan plaits. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, GB only, 18 plus, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv.
The world is vast, offering endless possibilities. But Claire's world has only been getting smaller. She doesn't leave the country. She barely leaves the house. Still traumatised by that roadside bomb in Iraq. More than 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems, helping them rediscover the world they once knew. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink, auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com, that's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. There's over £2 million worth of cash prizes to be won. And a chance to get your hands on some epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items. App may be required. May depend on winning moment. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC with cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
As we're waiting for one current world leader to speak, we're assessing the impact of a former world leader born 100 years ago today, Margaret Thatcher. Henry Barker says, Thatcher was terrible. She used the Falklands to stir up patriotism and win the following election. My father was captain of HMS Endurance before and during the Falklands. He warned the government about what was going down there before the war started. He sadly died in 97, my condolences, but wrote about his fight with Whitehall and Thatcher. And the book is titled Beyond Endurance, an epic of Whitehall and the South Atlantic conflict. Mr. Barker, thank you for that. Mike in Wales, not a hotbed of Conservative or Thatcher support. Margaret Thatcher story, I was knocked over by a car as an 11-year-old in 1979, just prior to the election. I ended up in a coma with a bleed on the brain. When I came around, my first question was, did Margaret Thatcher win the election? She was the greatest Prime Minister ever. We're off to Greece, and Mark is in Thessaloniki, if I'm saying that correctly. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Nick. Lovely to speak to you.
Good to have you on, sir. I hope I pronounced your town or village or province correctly, Thessaloniki, or is it an island? I don't know Greece very well.
Well, Nick, try Norwich. I'm actually from Norwich.
You're Norwich? I could do that one. Good old Norwich, the city centre. We need pedestrianisation in there. Mark, what are you going to tell me?
Well, I think to assess Margaret Thatcher, you have to go back to the 70s and really get your head around just what a hole Great Britain was in. Mm-hmm. We were in a dire state. My family had a long-standing small engineering business, and I grew up working in that business through school, then left school in 78. So in 79, when she came to power, I just started a carpentry apprenticeship.
Oh, yeah.
And the bonus system that was in place then for bricklayers, plumbers, carpenters, etc., with the local authority, quite simply meant that you could get all of your hours in, your maximum bonus, by 11 a.m. So after 11 a.m. in all the local forestry, you'd see all the local authority vans parked up, everybody reading the newspaper. and the country was in an incredible state. I was absolutely bored stiff, couldn't wait for my apprenticeship to finish so I could actually get on and achieve something for myself. And Margaret Thatcher freed the country up and people like me to do that.
Don't go. Stay if you can with us in Greece, because Gary's in Sheffield. I don't think you agree with what Mark has just outlined. Tell him why you think he's wrong, Gary.
Not at all, Nick. I thought this was some kind of wind-up, a celebration of Margaret Thatcher's birth. She's the one responsible for the state we're in now, to a degree, when she sold off all the utilities and the gas and the power, the energy sector, and we're reaping the rewards of that now. Her legacy is the miners' strike, the poll tax riots.
Well, let's bring Mark in. The situation in which the country currently finds itself is down to Margaret Thatcher. Mark.
Well, I'd say the poll tax was the greatest tax that never happened. We should be paying tax per person. To pay on the size of your house is totally ridiculous. So Margaret Thatcher was absolutely right on that. What she did get wrong was not replacing social housing.
Yes.
But then again, social housing should not be a right. Social housing should be a stopgap. We just haven't engineered things that way, unfortunately.
But what about selling off water, power, railways? What do you make of that, Mark?
Well, that's been mismanaged. I mean, that's been mismanaged and misoverseen by subsequent governments.
Isn't that the reality? Gary, if you look at a country such as France, where not all, but some of those utilities are run privately by responsible companies, it actually works rather well.
Well, some of our...
As Mark rightly says, Gary, the principle's sound, it's the way it was executed in the UK that did not work.
Some of the energy sector is owned by private friends companies, and it's not working very well at all, is it?
Yeah, but not all the water is owned by... Sorry, do you mean France?
Australian companies, French companies, anybody but us.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I thought you meant in France. No. But what Mark is saying, the principle works, the execution doesn't, which is not... Really, that's not Thatcher's fault, is it? Would it be?
Yeah, it would be. She sold them.
I don't know whether you're deliberately missing this point. The idea works. It's the people who bought them that's why it's failed. No, you won't buy that.
No, they should still be owned by the country. They're our property, and she sold them. The crown jewels of the country.
Do you mind my asking? Did you used to use the railways when they were owned by the country?
Yeah,
British Rail.
Yeah,
it was a shambles.
It was.
Well, so if you agree, it was a shambles.
You're picking one small aspects of what she sold. The energy, the water, the gas, the comms,
right. Everything
she could get her hands on, she sold.
All right, okay. Gary, thank you. Mark, thanks very much. Have yourself a good day in Greece. I'm sure it's warmer there than it is here. This comes in from Steve. Selling off council housing while forbidding councils to use proceeds to build more led us into the problem we have today, housing, which leads us into our obsession with immigration because of the shortage of housing. I absolutely did say that and selling off the school playing fields. Anastasia simply says Margaret Thatcher should not be insulted. My goodness me, just leave it like that. Catherine's in Hanwell. Catherine, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, well, I'm glad people have mentioned housing because that was why I rang. And what concerns me is I think there are MPs on both sides of the House who actually own ex-council houses that were sold off at a fraction of their economic worth.
Yes.
And they're getting rent from those. And I think that is why the system isn't being reformed, you know, because these houses, they belong to us. They were built with public money.
And they don't anymore. What happened was, of course, the idea was, and it worked, that Margaret Thatcher would create effectively a whole legion of property-owning conservatives who would continue to support her because they owned their own homes. But what she didn't do, and I've said this, you know, many, many times, she failed by not building what they call backfilling, building behind and building more homes.
Yeah. She actually didn't allow the councils to build more.
No.
And she actually said herself that it was a mistake to sell off the council houses. Well, great. Where does that leave all of
absolutely.
Us?
Absolutely. So what is your assessment of her ultimately?
Well, I agree with the last caller, you know, that now we are suffering the consequences,
You still blame Britain in 2025 on Margaret Thatcher?
I think the cost of living crisis is housing. People can't afford housing. They can't afford utility bills. They can't afford water. All that profit going to the shareholders is taking money out of the economy. It's bleeding the economy dry. People have got no money. They've got no money to buy anything.
But they had no money when she... You might not have been around in the 70s. There was no money in the 70s at all. There was no power.
Well, I remember the 70s, I think Mrs. Thatcher got in because people were sick and tired of the trade
union. No, they got in. They got in because we were doing our homework. I was doing my homework by candlelight.
Yeah, there were some power cuts. I mean, they were quite fun.
She stood initially. Who runs the country, her or the trade unions? And it was the unions who were running the country then.
Well, I know there was a three-day week, and I think the miners fell into a trap because the Tories were stockpiling coal. They fell into a trap. I think there could have been a managed closure of the pit instead of just the whole thing shut down. Even pits that still could yield some coal.
All right. Okay, Catherine, thank you. Nick in York, good Nick of York. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Hello, sir.
Earlier on, you said that Margaret Thatcher stopped school milk, but I don't think that's quite fair.
Oh, she was the education secretary, wasn't she? You're right.
She was education secretary. She stopped it, but the decision was actually a cabinet decision, which was forced on her.
No.
And I believe that she actually was quite against that.
Okay.
So it's a bit unfair, all this Margaret Thatcher milk snatcher stuff is a bit of propaganda against her.
It did stick, though, didn't it, Nick? Thatcher, the milk snatcher.
In stuff, I'm afraid so, yes.
All right, before I let you go, just quickly, an assessment as a whole of Margaret Thatcher.
My views on Thatcher are completely mixed. I think she made some very important changes, but the way she went around them was extremely aggressive, and she did a lot of damage when she was doing it.
An example being, what, something like the council houses that we've talked about already?
Yeah, okay, exactly, that's a good point. I mean, okay, you know, she sold off the council houses, but then she didn't enable replacements to be built, which has been an absolute disaster.
That's right. And then, as also said, the school playing fields as well.
Yeah, that's is terrible. Selling off the state school playing fields was a great disadvantage to ordinary people growing up in ordinary circumstances going to those schools.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just in the short time we've been discussing it, it's such a, thank you for that, Nick, such a mixed assessment from what you were saying, and then there's Mark and there's Sean and others who are saying that effectively they owe their livelihood to it all. Well, we didn't get him at all, did we? Because I'm almost done for another day, and there's still no sign of President Trump addressing the Knesset. What I can tell you is there are many positives than there are negatives, and that is all the 20 hostages have now been, the IDF are reporting, have been returned, and of course now the exchange of the Palestinian prisoners or hostages, whichever you want to say, must continue. But that's it for today. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it from me, James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. Given that Donald Trump is famously teetotal, one thing we can say with some certainty is that the reasons behind this now half-hour-long delay before his address to the Knesset will not be the same as the reasons behind that time that Boris Yeltsin wouldn't get off a plane. It is, however, a moment of quiet magnificence, possibly quite loud magnificence, once the speech is delivered, and some people seem to be struggling to accept that a terrible person can do a wonderful thing. We may turn our attention to that question a little later in the programme, or we may focus on the question of what justice will look like as the families of the released hostages, and they have now all been freed, celebrate in ways that are almost impossible to imagine. What of the people still mourning loss?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the last remaining living hostages held in Gaza have now been released by Hamas. It means 20 captives have been handed over this morning, and some are now back in Israel to be reunited with their families. The family of one of them, Nimrod Cohen, watched the moment he was freed on TV. Israel will release hundreds of Palestinian detainees in exchange as part of Donald Trump's ceasefire deal. The US president is set to address the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, before a peace summit in Egypt later today. LBC's Matt Fry says it's a whirlwind tour of the Middle East.
He's a very popular man in Israel because he's managed to break the logjam. Whether you like Netanyahu or you hate him, and the country is pretty roughly divided on that matter in a very visceral way, it is Trump's juggernaut diplomacy that has managed to make today happen. Yeah, there's no doubt about that whatsoever.
Stay with LBC for the latest and follow live developments on the LBC app. In other news, two men have been charged with the murder in prison of the former Lost Prophets singer Ian Watkins. The 48-year-old, who was serving a 29-year term for child sex offences, was pronounced dead at HMP Wakefield on Saturday morning. Rashid Geddel and Samuel Dodsworth, who are 25 and 43 respectively, are due to appear at Leeds Magistrates Court. Donald Trump has threatened to provide Ukraine with long-range missiles if Russia does not stop its invasion. Moscow has expressed extreme concern about the possibility of Kiev being given access to the Tomahawk system. Buckingham Palace has announced the German president will make a state visit to the UK in December. Frank-Walter Steinmeier has accepted an invitation from the King. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 30 points at 94.58. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most places, turning increasingly sunny in Scotland, a high of 18 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. There are few things more exciting in the world of media than live broadcasting. There are, however, some moments that do not really lend themselves to it. And those moments are best encapsulated as when scheduled things don't happen on schedule. It is now approximately 1 hour since we were expecting the President of the United States, Donald. Everyone started adding the J lately, haven't they? Donald J. Trump. I'm James E. O'Brien. To address the Knesset in Israel, and he is yet to do so. Perhaps because events have been unfolding in the interim. Every living hostage has now been released. That is something that has been, I think, confirmed beyond all reasonable doubt. And, of course, the question of what he's likely to say in the course of the speech is probably quite easy to answer. It will be, sticks in the craw of some people. I'm delighted to say it doesn't stick in my craw. I wondered whether it might, but he will be doing a richly deserved lap of honour. There is, of course, room for nuance and interpretation, which is where we generally come in on this programme, and that is what we will be trying to do shortly. But in the interim, my job really is just to sort of burble in a constructive fashion until this speech actually begins, with no current indication of either why it hasn't begun. The world's television cameras are fixed upon the podium, behind which three Israeli flags hang. And I don't think anybody there's got any better idea of when it is likely to start than I have. And those will probably be the two ways into it. I may be a bit early for the when an awful person does something wonderful conversation, although I notice an awful lot of people struggling with that. And the reason why I mention it is because rarely does the dangers of footballification feel as acute as they feel today. Because you want to be generous at a time like this to somebody who is, by most sort of objective accounts, at least morally and politically reprehensible. And you should be generous, but do you start trying a bit too hard to be generous because you're so conscious of the consequences of letting your judgments and your prejudices influence your reaction? Or is there a rather large problem, a rather large issue of what happens next? Justice, if you like, or atonement, retribution, or responsibility? Are we all going to just draw a line under what has happened with some Hamas leaders, albeit that the peak of the pyramid, the pinnacle of the pyramid, was taken out a year ago this week? And that's one of the reasons why questions about how it has taken so long are still resonating, but particularly through Israel, where the a speech given by, I think, Steve Witkoff over the weekend was cheering Donald Trump's name to the rafters, the assembled crowds, and booed the mention of Benjamin Netanyahu. But the question of what Chapter 2 looks like, presuming, as we will do throughout the course of this morning and hopefully this week, presuming that the peace deal holds, that the ceasefire agreement holds, and that we begin to tick off all 20 of the points on it, then Hamas leaders, the remaining Hamas leaders, are ideally to be removed entirely from the equation and to live out the rest of their days in relative luxury in Qatar. And Israeli leaders, or the Israeli leader, who is, of course, still wanted on war crime allegations by the International Criminal Court, will also not be held responsible for anything that has happened since October the 7th in Gaza. And we may get on to that. Or you may tell me that it's too early, and today is just the day for celebration, contemplation and commemoration of the hostages who haven't come home and the tens of thousands of people who have been killed in Gaza. But the time now is 7 minutes after 10. If I set up a phone in now and you ring in and then we cross live to the Knesset, I think that works, doesn't it? Because I've got no way. I could literally say in the next 30 seconds, oh, and now we're crossing live to Israel for the speech from Donald Trump addressing Knesset. Or I could really just carry on blathering for 30 minutes. So I think it's in all our interests for me to set up a phone in. So there are two ways into it, and I really hope you join in today. The first is now you've had time for a little bit more contemplation. We went in cold on this on the show last week, but we've had an opportunity to read plenty of coverage. I'd recommend the New York Times is very good at the moment. The Times of Israel is very good at the moment. Haaretz, Israeli media organization, always provides a very liberal-leaning interpretation of events. You've had time to process where we are and what is likely to transpire, and I think I just want to know what you're doing with it, where you are now, how you feel, how you greet this news. I think we'll do a side order of somebody terrible doing something wonderful. You can't deny the awfulness of Donald Trump. Some of the allegations, or some of the facts, established facts that have been established back home in the United States of America are absolutely extraordinary. Deploying troops on streets in American cities where the government, the local governors don't want any troops on streets in American cities, telling barefaced and blatant lies about warfare and violence and crime, setting up or softening up the population, the electorate perhaps, for incredible injustices. The bribery allegation, an extraordinary bribery allegation involving one of his senior appointments, just sort of waltzing away with a bag full of $50,000. All of this stuff is unfolding as we speak. But I don't think you can let